using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Monday, the 22nd of November, year of our Lord, 2021, day 616 of the emergency holding the world hostage. We've had a very violent weekend. We have seen protests and many riots across the world against this COVID tyranny. We have seen a brutal, disgusting, premeditated murder of now five people, at the very least, 40 injured at a Christmas parade, justified and provoked by MSNBC and Democrat politicians. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Let's begin with the Rittenhouse situation, because this is at the core of what they're trying to do in terms of creating a civil war. And, of course, the other event that I did not mention, several of them, as a matter of fact, but it's all tied in with this. It's all tied in with these Soros district attorneys. This was something that was put together, plotted on the way out by Eric Holder and Obama and Soros, pouring lots of money into district attorney races so that you could see the types of things that are happening in San Francisco. I used that as an analogy last week to say clearly you can see what is happening here. You see how the robberies are getting worse and worse all the time, how big chains are going out of business and shutting down their stores in San Francisco because anybody can go in and rob $1,000 at a time, and the district attorney doesn't want to prosecute that as a crime. That's not sustainable. Any civilization that has declined into such depravity that these types of crimes are not even considered to be a crime. You know, you understand, you shall not murder, you shall not steal. These are basic things that every society understands, but you can get to a point where your conscience has been seared with a hot iron or with a lot of news media paid for by Soros and pharmaceutical companies. And the Republican and Democrat parties. So when we look at this and the state that we're in right now, of course, over the weekend, we had a couple of stores. Now they're going after very high-end stores, Louis Vuitton as well as Nordstrom, completely clearing the store out. And it's getting larger and larger all the time. And so as that is happening, let's take a look at what happened with Rittenhouse. And I begin with this because we have MSNBC host calls Rittenhouse a little murderous white supremacist. Now, I have to ask you, how in the world do we have a situation where these people are allowed to get away with this? Where is the outrage of the left? When we look at Sandy Hook, for example, I don't have to testify in that, fortunately. This thing has, from my perspective, I don't have to get involved in it. They had called me to testify, but the judge gave them a default judgment. But the basis of that was false statements made by Alex Jones that would had some harassing phone calls to these families, and they felt like they were threatened. Now, let's understand what MSNBC has done. How are they allowed, and how are these Democrat politicians allowed to push and push and push a racist narrative when when Kyle Rittenhouse and the people that he shot were all white? How are they allowed to push this, hatred and racism and get away with it? Because now we've got people dead in Waukesha, deliberately murdered because of this narrative. So you have MSNBC host Tiffany Cross called Kyle Rittenhouse a little murderous white supremacist. Said the fact that white supremacists roam the halls of Congress freely and celebrate this little murderous white supremacist. Welcome to the modern Republican Party. This is what a majority of white people voted for. A majority of white people are in favor of this kind of violence. So, obviously, all white people should be killed. You're justified if you are a person of color. And as she's saying this, I'm not going to play it because it just disgusts me to hear it. But as she's saying it, this guy who looks like he's an older guy. I don't know who any of these people are. There's Tiffany Cross is a black, young black woman. Then there is somebody in the middle. I don't know. I'm sure she's not a white person because they're going after white people. She's Indian or Mexican or something. And then there's a black guy. And the whole time she's saying all this stuff, nodding his head in agreement if you look at the clip, which I'm not going to play. A majority of white people are in favor of this kind of violence. So we should kill the white people. This is what they're pushing. They're pushing a civil war. They're pushing a race war. This has been a long time running. This is what the open borders are about. It's about civil war, ethnic conflict in Europe as well as in America. It's deliberate. It's by design. And you have these people, the politicians open the borders, the politicians bring them in, shower them with cash, and these people are pushing the hatred for ethnic conflict because things are going to get a lot harder. We're going to go into a Great Depression. We're going to go into hyperinflation. And they want to have a civil war and a worldwide war to go along with that. That's what they're building up for. That's so we don't come after them. Because we already know that they have a program to kill all of us and to enslave all of us. There's no question about that anymore. And so to keep us from coming after them, as Bloomberg said with guillotines, they want to have civil war, they want to have world war, they want to have ethnic conflict. And this is why they're pushing this. One MSNBC guest host said the acquittal made it open season on white nationalists. So there you go. So it's open season. It's Christmas season. So let's just drive a car through the Christmas parade. This is coming, by the way. You know, it's not just this. It's not just these comments. You had MSNBC banned from the trial, remember last week? Why? Because they were shadowing and following the van that was taking jurors around. They wanted to dox the jurors. They wanted to intimidate the jurors. Why is there no charge against MSNBC for jury tampering? I've covered trials where you had New Jersey weed man who was representing himself. And he made some comments on social media about his accuser. And he was hit with jury tampering and various other things. And they were innocuous comments, actually. But this is MSNBC trying to intimidate the jurors, wanting to dox the jurors. This is full-on jury tampering. And so now they want to direct the wrath and the violence and the riots to all white people. It's open season on white people, says MSNBC. How in the world does this hateful, racist organization continue? Well, it's simply because that's the kind of division and racism that the government wants. So protests immediately began in Oregon, Portland, Oregon. You had 200 protesters on Friday night attack the police station there. The pictures of it, you can pull up some of these pictures. The Daily Mail's got several of them, Travis. But they surrounded the police station. They intimidated about a dozen officers who were in riot gear, about 200 people. And so there are pictures of these police officers right there. You can see it. Good. Thank you. These police officers coming out of the parking lot area there. They had to, they backed back as kind of a standoff, and then they lowered the garage door to protect themselves. Then as you keep going down, there's a garage door going down. As you keep going down, you'll see that what they did was they put graffiti and threw eggs, apparently, against the front of the police station. Signs that said KKK, in here and keep going down. You'll see the pictures of the there it is right there. And then spray painting and graffiti on the police station, burn this. Well, good luck with that because it's concrete. It's the kind of brutalist architecture that the government loves anymore. But anyway, burn this, KKK, so forth, right? And then throwing eggs against all of the rest of it. And, of course, Portland wasn't alone. They had several other U.S. cities, New York, L.A., Chicago. And so in that situation in Portland, they declared a riot. There were some people who were arrested there. Things did get violent, and there was property destroyed, vehicles that were burned. In New York, the new mayor, Eric Adams, who used to be a police officer, and he's black, he said, we're not going to live like this in New York City, and we're not going to have to live walking home at night with someone trying to attack you. Because we've had a lot of situations that we've shown you in New York City where people have been just blindsided, attacked. Elderly people, women, even men that they blindside, hit you from behind. You had Rick Moranis, the comedian who was in Ghostbusters and many other things. Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. He's now elderly. He's walking the street of New York and just got, you know, smashed by a person because of the color of his skin. And so Eric Adams said, we're not going to have to live walking home at night with someone trying to attack you. We're not going to allow these extremists on both sides to win. I hope that is the case. If it is, that will be a big improvement over de Blasio, the Marxist. As a matter of fact, that is what this is truly about, the Marxism. You got people like de Blasio who honeymooned in Cuba, you know, just like Bernie Sanders who honeymooned in Russia just before the Soviet Union collapsed. These people love communism, and that is what is at the essence of this. And I'm not going to be intimidated by people who talk, oh, commie here and commie there. Yeah, they have inoculated themselves from being called communists, but I'm going to call them communists because that's what they are. They're proud of it, frankly. And here's what they were doing in Chicago. This is the crowd. Listen to what they're chanting.
Solution! It's communist revolution! The only solution!
Well, I guess that depends on what the question is and what the problem is. If the problem is the rule of law, if the problem is that you've got juries that look at the facts and they don't give you what you demand because of your hatred, your bigotry, and your ignorance, if the problem is juries, if it's the rule of law, then yes, the solution is a communist revolution because you can get rid of all those things, the rule of law, all the rest of it. Get rid of all of that. We're going to have a race war to usher in a communist revolution. And this has been the tactic that has been pushed by Bill Ayers and people of his ilk, the Weather Underground, friends of Barack Obama. How did he become friends? Well, hanging out in Chicago, pushing the takeover of the educational establishment. That's why I call the schools the Marxist seminaries, because that's what they are. They were designed for that and more. Everything that's happening with the LGBT grooming by these pedophiles in schools, I've got some amazing news that has broken on that. Some audio recordings from a California Teachers Association where they're talking about how they can groom kids into LGBT and conservative areas against the wishes of their parents and how they stalk them on social media to find out which children they can groom into their pedophile agenda. But when we look at the bigger picture of this, this is all about using the schools to win this on a long-term orientation, a long-term war. And Bill Ayers knew that. Bill Ayers was a communist revolutionary from a very, very wealthy family, protected, never went to jail for the crimes that he committed. Instead, he was allowed to get away with it and then to go into education and start bombing the minds of our children. And his organization was pushing what at the beginning was called white skin privilege. It's now just become white privilege, but that all goes back to him. They realized they were not getting any traction with an economic class warfare revolution as they had in Europe, not in America. So they decided they would go with a race war to support their revolution. And that's exactly what the plan has been. And they're just executing on it. As all of this is happening, at the very same time, you had a Florida man acquitted of murder charges the same day as Kyle Rittenhouse, a black man by the name of Coffee. He shot in self-defense, he thought, and he was being attacked by a SWAT team. He said he thought it was a home invasion. His girlfriend, 21 years old at the time, died after being shot 10 times by a SWAT officer during the raid. And so this is another one of these no-knock raids by SWAT teams. And I have reported on these things from the, I want to say, from the beginning of time. No, actually, from the late 1980s. Seems like forever, my entire life. I remember one of the first cases of this. It wasn't a black man. It was a wealthy property owner in California, and the government wanted his property. They tried to buy it under eminent domain. He was not interested in selling it. And so, lo and behold, not too long after that, the DEA claimed that they saw some marijuana plants growing on this vast land. Anybody could have planted it there. And so they authorized a SWAT team invasion of his home. He thought it was a home invasion. He came down the stairway with a gun in his hand. They murdered him and then took his property. So this type of thing has been going on for quite some time. Now, in this particular case, I don't know all the details. I don't know if they had a reason to go to Coffee's house, if he was involved in drugs or if it was a case of mistaken identity. But either way, I don't support these no-knock SWAT team raids. They're dangerous or reckless. Many times they go to the wrong place. Many times innocent people are harmed. They've had situations where they've thrown flash grenades into the cradle of a baby. This is a reckless use of force. It has no place in a free society. It came in with the war on drugs. It came in with Daryl Gates in Los Angeles. And when you had the Rodney King riots, Daryl Gates had militarized the police there in L.A. They had MRAPs. They had all kinds of stuff. He pioneered the SWAT team stuff. What'd they do? Well, they just retreated to their fortress and protected themselves and left everybody else to fend for themselves. They didn't use all that military equipment to restore order. They used it just to protect themselves. And so in this particular situation, Coffey said, yeah, I shot at the officers, but I did so in self-defense. He said he thought he was being robbed when SWAT began making their entry. This is going back to 2017. The officers allegedly broke out a rear window and then used a pole to detonate a flashbang. He believed the pole was a rifle, he said, and he shot through the open window to defend himself. Now, this is a situation where, these are police officers that are there. Again, it's a SWAT team raid. But they said he was acting in self-defense. Have you noticed the press focusing on that? Have you noticed MSNBC focusing on that? No. It doesn't fit what they're trying to do. See, we have a black person who doesn't understand it's a SWAT team raid, no-knock SWAT raid. He fires in self-defense, and the jury acquits him of murder charges. That's not paid attention to because that doesn't help the race war narrative. This is all about pushing a race war. This is what MSNBC is trying to do. It's what the politicians are trying to do. It's what the ACLU is trying to do, the American Civil Liberties Union. Don't be surprised about this. I'm actually kind of surprised that Recent Magazine even thought it was newsworthy that the ACLU attacked Kyle Rittenhouse's civil liberties. He's just got too much civil liberty, they say. See, I've known for 40-plus years that the ACLU hates the Second Amendment with a passion. And there's many other civil liberties that they don't support. They don't even support free speech anymore. Back when I was involved with the Libertarian Party in North Carolina, people would say, they would bring in somebody from the ACLU, and other people would say, yeah, I'm a card-carrying ACLU member because, somebody had made that comment. Was it George H.W. Bush or something about somebody being a card-carrying member of the ACLU, which was a reference back to the McCarthy trials, are you card-carrying communists? Well, bottom line is the ACLU are a bunch of card-carrying communists, quite frankly. And I would never carry their card, and I would say to people, why are you supporting these people? Haven't you seen what they do? Don't you understand what their agenda is? They're not about liberty. They would have Nadine Strasser, who was the least hostile to the Second Amendment, who would come and speak and, you know, to try to get people to send them money. But I never fell for it. But Reason thinks that it is somehow they've just discovered. Look at this. The ACLU has gone off the deep end. Well, I'm not surprised about that at all. I think what is maybe more surprising is the fact that they've jettisoned any pretension of supporting civil liberties when they go after the First Amendment now. But that's where the left is, because they've got enough power that they don't have to pretend to like any civil liberties. They're authoritarian Marxists, and so they don't have to even pretend anything otherwise now. For anyone who had followed the trial closely, this outcome is unsurprising, says Reason. The prosecution, in other words, the acquittal of Kyle Rittenhouse, not what the ACLU is doing. They get to that in a second. They say the prosecution simply didn't meet its burden of proof. Rittenhouse's defense team presented considerable evidence that he reasonably feared for his life each time he pulled the trigger, just like this black man, Coffee, in Florida, who was the victim of a surprise SWAT team raid and didn't know what he was doing and feared for his life. Said, indeed, people who did not follow the trial closely and instead relied on secondhand punditry from liberal media figures like MSNBC, I'll add, probably missed some very basic facts about the case, including that it had little to do with race. It had nothing to do with race. Rittenhouse and all three of his victims were white. It had nothing to do with race. He didn't shoot people because they were black. Those are simply lies by MSNBC. And Reason goes on to say this is an important point that some mainstream media coverage continues to miss. They didn't miss anything. At MSNBC, for instance, Jahan Jones, a writer for the show hosted by Joy Reid's blog, reacted to the verdict by explicitly saying that Rittenhouse's whiteness produced the acquittal. He said, Rittenhouse is a white teen who abides by white rules, and white people, empathetic to those rules, seem poised to insulate him from the repercussion. How much longer are we going to tolerate this kind of overt, over-the-top racism based on the color of skin? I am sick and tired of these so-called intellectuals and these pundits on TV getting away with this kind of racism. Long ago, many years ago, when they first started this trick, I said, be careful. We don't want to have real racism. And by you calling wolf all the time for political purposes, what you're doing is you're giving a free pass to real racism. These people now have become, they're not just giving free passes to real racists. They have become the most virulent racists I've ever seen in my lifetime at MSNBC and other places. I've not seen any more hateful rhetoric coming from the Ku Klux Klan than is coming from MSNBC, and I grew up in the South. Cori Bush, a Democrat from Missouri, said this is white supremacy in action. The judge, the jury, the defendant, white supremacy in action. And, of course, you got Colin Kaepernick and Black Lives, Black Marxist Lives Matter, right? That's what this, what it really is. I mean, Black Lives Matter is simply a Marxist organization. You got Patrice Cullors and others who are using Cullors to mask their Marxism. They bragged about how they were trained Marxists. And this is their strategy. It is to create a race war that can be the basis of their revolution. We have to be very careful about violence. I'm going to talk about that when we talk about the protests around the world, some of them peaceful, some of them violent. And let me tell you, we do not want to go into, we don't want to become an angry, violent mob. That is not a solution to anything. That's a trap. That's bait. That's what they want you to do. That justifies then all of their Orwellian tactics and their jackbooted thuggery. If you take that bait, then you've just lost. That's their game, in a nutshell. In a Twitter thread, the ACLU complained that Rittenhouse is not held accountable for his, quote, conscious decision to travel across state lines and injure one person and take the lives of two people protesting the shooting of Jacob Blake by police. Well, as Reason points out, it's not illegal to travel across state lines. The fact that he wandered outside the boundaries of his home and entered a neighboring municipality is irrelevant to the case. Absolutely is. But the Democrats are trying to pull that in. Democrats in Washington, Gerald Nadler and others, are saying, well, we need to open up an investigation of this. Because, you know, he traveled across state lines. Again, to two communities, and he had ties in he had ties in that community as well. So anyway, one might have expected that an organization, Rights Reason, meaning the ACLU, that says that it's dedicated to the preservation of civil liberties, would not so cavalierly take the side of prosecutors against the concept of self-defense. The ACLU purports to believe that all people, even the guilty, deserve due process protection. Ah, but what you don't understand, Reason, is their hatred and animosity toward the Second Amendment. And you also don't understand this is run by a lot of radical left Marxists at the ACLU. They're just using the label of liberty as an excuse. And you should have figured that out at Reason a long, long time ago. By the way, it's not just the left who is egging this thing on. You've got politicians in the GOP, including Donald Jr., who are pushing on this, riding the coattails, trying to fundraise off of this. And Kyle Rittenhouse's lawyer called him out on it, and good for him for doing that. Mark Richards said, there's a lot of people trying to profit on this, and I don't think people should do it. He said he was unhappy with the likes of Donald Trump Jr. offering Rittenhouse free guns, while GOP reps Paul Gosar, Matt Gaetz, and Madison Cawthorn all offered him an internship. He said they're raising money on it. Hey, you know, grifters are going to grift, right? What did they do after throwing the election under the bus with a lockdown? Well, they raised money on it, didn't they? He said, they're raising money on it. You have all these Republican congressmen saying, come work for me. They want to trade on his celebrity. And I think it's disgusting. These are the kinds of bottom-feeding, celebrity, limelight-loving people who will always attach themselves to whatever is shiny and new and on the podium. They will buy their way onto the podium. They will push people off of the podium. They will wrap themselves in whatever the cause du jour of the day is so they can get attention and money. They're narcissists. That's what they did with Stop the Steal. That's what Alex did with Stop the Steal. That's what these people are doing with all of this. It's a grifters are going to grift. It's just that simple. So on the other side, you have Jerry Nadler, who is pushing double jeopardy for Kyle Rittenhouse, simply on the idea that there's got to be something there because he crossed state lines. We've got to come up with something. Well, as Information Liberation pointed out, he was not armed while crossing state lines. So that's a problem, big problem for them. But remember, we've seen this before with Derek Chauvin, that you had Merrick Garland all set to go with federal charges in case he didn't get the verdict that he wanted. And then he still hit the other police officers with federal charges after the case. But according to Fox 13, there doesn't appear to be any legal basis for the DOJ to bring Rittenhouse up on federal charges. But then again, as Information Liberation points out, is that going to stop him? Do we have the rule of law anymore? That said, there's no legal basis for the Department of Justice and the FBI to use counterterrorism tools against parents who are protesting anti-white indoctrination in public schools. But Garland went ahead with that anyway. Let's take a quick break, and we're going to come back and take a look at what happened at the Christmas parade as a product of all of this. And I'm not going to show you the actual disgusting, heartbreaking pictures of this car running over people, deliberately targeting them and running over them. But we'll take a look at what is involved and who did it, allegedly. We'll be right back. Stay with us. The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com. All right, let's take a look at what happened in Waukesha at the Christmas parade. And I'm not going to show the actual attack, but just so that you know that this is premeditated. Look at this. You'll see the people there at the parade. Watch this SUV go by real fast in front of these people. There it goes. Here it is from another angle. This is a young child standing inside. Look at how fast he's going at that point. Nearly hit that little child there and heads down. And at that point, you can see there's some clips if you want to see it. I don't suggest it. If you want to see it, you can see it all over the place on social media. I don't want to push this out, frankly. It's disgusting to have to report on this. There's now, last night we heard, 20 people have been taken in so far. They didn't know what was happening. But from the very beginning, it appeared that it was worse than what they were saying. Then later on, it went to the hospitalization count started going up. As of this morning, the latest information from the police department there is 5 dead, 40 injured. And how extensive are those injuries going to be? I mean, he targeted people and just ran them down, ran over them. You can see pictures of the vehicle that he had. I mean, it is the front of it is really smashed up. So the first reports of this, person came out at the Waukesha Holiday Parade. I guess they don't call it a Christmas parade anymore. See, we've purged God out of society, anything that has anything to do with God. And I understand a lot of people don't want to celebrate Christmas as that because it's not in the Bible. I just say, though, that it's an opportunity. We always celebrate it in our family. It's an opportunity to talk to people about Christ. It's an opportunity to talk about the incarnation, to celebrate the incarnation. Not a big fan of all the Santa Claus stuff. We had that discussion with our kids at a very early age. And one of them said, I know it wouldn't be Santa Claus. I know that there's no Santa Claus. Because if Santa Claus was real, he'd be in the Bible. I thought that's perfect logic. So we don't shy away from it. I understand people's convictions on both sides of that. But let me just say, when we start putting this stuff, holiday this and holiday that, understand that the spirit behind that is to push Christianity out. It's a spirit of intolerance. And that as much as anything else has galvanized me to celebrate Christmas. If you're going to tell me that I can't celebrate Christmas, then I'm going to celebrate Christmas. Anyway, at the holiday parade, they said, a car just broke through the police line, plowing through pedestrians and firing rounds out the window. Family and I are safe. Happened 20 feet in front of us, said a Twitter user. Now, there's been some corrections from that. The police say there were no shots being fired out of the car. Those were shots being fired by the police trying to stop him. And then you had these comments, as I saw yesterday on Twitter, people making all kinds of comments, essentially supporting this. Yeah, because it's against white people. It's against those white Christians out there with a Christian parade. Oh, I hate the middle class, that type of stuff. One person said, at least it wasn't a Nissan, after they showed pictures of the smashed up SUV. And then this person wrote this, and I think I retweeted it. Said, why live in downtown Waukesha? The aftermath. Kids dying in the street with screaming parents. The screams I heard. Will never leave. Never leave me. Imagine being around family smiling, and before you could react, there are trails of bodies. This is how, when I looked at this, it's heartbreaking to see these people run down and to know that so many of them were children. And then to see the callous reactions on Twitter, on social media. This country is so dark. It's unbelievable to me. We have descended into a darkness I never thought I would see. Eleven adults, 12 children, rushed to different hospitals in the area immediately. Witnesses reported several young children lying on the ground. Now 5 dead. We don't know the details. Adults, children. Police said reports that the driver fired gunshots were false. They were trying to stop him. Now the person they have in custody fits the description that went out by somebody who was being interviewed by CBS 5. The witness apparently did not realize he was on live TV. He told the CBS station, he said the driver was, quote, a black guy with dreadlocks and by himself. One individual. They have, after they got the car, and I don't know, maybe this guy is so unbelievably callous, and he has such a long criminal record. He may have used his own car, for all we know. May have not even bothered to steal a car, so they couldn't find him. He might have just used his own car. The details will be coming out. It's too soon to know. The person that they have arrested, Darrell Edward Brooks Jr., a 39-year-old black male with a long criminal history, this was reported by New York Post's Carol Markowitz, said that he is the man in custody. Now, he was let out on bond on Friday his latest arrest. These are things that were already on his criminal record. He has been on his criminal record, and I don't know if these are things that he's been found guilty of or charged with, but these go back some time. In this record, there is no date of when these occurred, but for example, resisting or obstructing an officer and then bail jumping, which is a felony. He's got multiple felonies that he's been convicted of. And so I would say that these are older charges, even though I don't have full information here, because he didn't jump bail. He was let out by a Soros district attorney. This is why I said, when you look at the plans behind this, you look at Obama, this pupil of Bill Ayers, and George Soros being connected in this. And as Obama was leaving office, as Trump was coming in, Obama and Eric Holder strategized as what they were going to do. And one of their key strategies, and I reported on this back in late 2016, before the transition with Trump, even, as they were meeting, they were open about the fact that they were going to focus on getting state district attorneys and local attorneys general elected around the country. Soros subsequently was spending millions of dollars on local district attorney races. You had the open radical left Muslim, Keith Ellison, who was a congressman, and he was elected the state attorney general, and that was with support of Soros. You had a situation in San Antonio where, in most of these races, Soros got the person that he wanted, especially in California. That's what's happening in San Francisco with all this looting that's going on there. That's because of a Soros district attorney. A guy, by the way, who was raised by Bill Ayers and his wife after his parents were not able to beat the terrorist reps being in the Weather Underground. So this guy that is a district attorney in San Francisco that we'll be talking about in a moment, that guy is actually raised by Bill Ayers. Bill Ayers is right at the epicenter of all this stuff. I can tell you, having covered him live, he is one intelligent, slippery person. Oh, he's pure evil, but he's smart, very smart. Anyway, getting back to this, this guy was let out on bail Friday, $1,000 bail. This Soros district attorney doesn't want to have bail at all, and they've lowered this. Because listen to this guy's rap sheet, resisting or obstructing an officer. Bail jumping, a felony. Second degree recklessly endangering safety, a felony. Domestic abuse assessments. Disorderly conduct, domestic abuse assessments, battery. Domestic abuse assessments again with another thing. So he is somebody who's been very abusive with those people around him. And he has attacked officers. He's jumped bail. But, you know, just let him out. And just $1,000, just a nominal amount. So it appears that, again, that's the guy. He hasn't been indicted. That is the allegation. He seems to match the description, and he has been arrested. So we will see what happens with that. Meanwhile, a Black Lives Matter supporter who allegedly drove through a crowd of pro-Trump protesters has had another win in court and may just walk. On Friday, same day that this guy got let out, 2 days before he drove his car through the Christmas parade, allegedly, a Black Lives Matter supporter was accused last year of driving through a crowd of supporters of Trump, has now won another round in court that could ultimately lead to her not even going to trial. Judge Leverson on Friday ruled in favor of Tatiana Turner, who allegedly ran over two protesters in September 2020 in Yorba Linda, California, according to the Orange County Register. Leverson ruled that Turner's attorney was not given the chance to present witnesses or arguments during a preliminary hearing. The court finds the defendant was denied a substantial constitutional right, said the judge. So this is a procedural issue. However, this is not the first rodeo for this person. The initial hearing before another judge, Judge Beatrice Gordon, lasted for 3 days but ended before the defense was able to call any witnesses. Gordon determined that there was not enough evidence to proceed to trial. It was mostly peaceful driving into the Trump crowd. So a new preliminary hearing will be scheduled. At that point, a judge will rule if there is enough evidence against Turner to proceed to trial. If the judge rules there is insufficient evidence, Turner will walk free. Now, what is the narrative of what allegedly happened here? The charges stem from a Black Lives Matter protest on September 20th, 2020, during which supporters of Trump were also demonstrating nearby. The two sides eventually mingled and scuffles took place. Turner allegedly got into a car surrounded by over a dozen protesters, accelerated, stopped, accelerated again, running over a woman's head and a man's leg. Turner told police that protesters had flashed guns at her and that she acted in self-defense, but police said no guns were visible at the protest. So what do we do with that? Well, if we wanted to behave as Black Lives Matter, if we wanted to throw the country into some kind of a Marxist revolution, then I guess we could all take to the streets and start beating anybody of a certain skin color, right? We don't want to do that. And when I come back, I want to talk about what happened in the protests in Europe. We have violent examples and we have peaceful examples. And as I said before, we better make sure that we don't take that bait, that we don't attack people violently. We'll be right back. Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family. All right, let's talk about the violence that happened in Europe over the weekend. There's a lot of violence going around. We had protests over the New World Order tyranny that is rolling out, and there are pictures of people marching in the street. Their banner says, control the borders, not the people. You notice how this is happening? Yeah, isn't it kind of a coincidence that we have the same thing being done in Europe that is being done here? We have open borders bringing in people who, for the most part, are young males. Who are, you know, these are not people who are coming in like the pilgrims did trying to build a life. No, these are young males who are coming in many cases starting to look like the Mariel Boatlift in terms of criminal class that is being allowed to come in because there is no vetting of that. They would like to have people who are criminals. You know that. And so the same thing is happening in Europe. They want ethnic conflict. That's exactly what they want. And at the same time that they are completely laissez-faire with anybody who's coming in, the more dangerous, the better. They are cracking down on ordinary people living their quiet and peaceful lives. And this is happening worldwide. So they're holding the sign, control the borders, not the people. Demonstrations against virus restrictions took place in Switzerland, Croatia, Italy, Northern Ireland, the Netherlands on Saturday. A day after Dutch police opened fire on protesters and seven people were injured in rioting that erupted in Rotterdam. Protesters rallied against coronavirus restrictions and mandatory COVID passes needed in many European countries in order to enter restaurants, Christmas markets, or sporting events, as well as against mandatory vaccinations. Austria's lockdown will begin today. And again, they say it comes as we have a new surge, right? Always going to be a surge. Always the same game that we've seen for the last year. Nobody believes this anymore. We all know what's happening. And so now the real difference is not between people who are gaslighted into fear about this thing and scared to death. But the real division is between people who are using this and nakedly lying to the population about what is going on. And the people who are passively and willfully complying with this, and those who refuse to do so. So many of them were mocking the Austrian Chancellor, Schallenberg, and some of them were wearing doctor's scrubs, some were wearing tinfoil hats, they had signs, my body, my choice, we're standing up for our kids, and so forth. As a matter of fact, I had a listener send this to me, Gesundheit pass. Gesundheit. Yeah, that's what we used to say. I don't think I can ever say Gesundheit to anybody. We used to do it as a joke. Right? It means good health. When somebody would sneeze. Well, now they have turned sneezes into an excuse for Nazi occupation and Nazi-style passes. These are Nazi. This is a picture of a Nazi good health pass, Gesundheit pass. This was occupied France that they pulled this. And accompanying that is this document here that is written in French. And what it reads is enforcement measures under the ninth order issued by the occupation authorities regarding Jews. Pursuant to subsection 1 of the order of July 8, 1942. Well, it sounds like a Biden order, doesn't it? Well, I've got an order here that I put out. I didn't pass this as a law or anything, but I've got an order. Providing for measures regarding Jews, unvaccinated, said Jews or unvaccinated shall be prohibited from entering any public venue and taking part in any public event listed hereafter. Where did they get this idea? Yeah, it was all done before, wasn't it? Just change the groups, change the narrative, and then attack anybody who notices that it's the same tactic. The measure shall enter into effect forthwith. And then here are the places where you can't go. You have restaurants and eating places, cafes, tea rooms and bars, theaters, movie theaters, concerts, music halls, other places of leisure, public telephone booths. Oh, see, you don't want people communicating with each other at all. Markets and fairs, swimming pools and beaches, museums, libraries, public exhibitions, historical forts and castles, all other historical monuments, sporting events, whether as a participant or spectator, race courses and other betting premises, camping sites, parks. So this is for your health, of course, right? It's a Gesundheit pass. Signed in German as the Higher SS and the police leader of the German military command in France. So it was sent to me by a listener. Hey, yeah, I mean, it's just a coincidence, I'm sure, that it seems exactly like what is happening in Austria as well. As a matter of fact, before the demonstrations this last weekend, you had there was a picture that circulated that showed a bunch of German officers, police officers, who were holding a sign and said, never again fascism. They said they were going to push back against these other police officers who are going to do that. I didn't see any indication that that had happened, but at least if they don't participate in terms of enforcing these Nazi rules. So Germany is going to follow Austria's example, of course. See, this is the medical dictatorship Anschluss. It's an agreement there. And making the vaccinations compulsory. Amid a fourth wave of the pandemic, as the Daily Mail points out, France is also facing, listen to this, this is serious now, worrying number of cases. Yeah, we got cases here. Got a surge in the cases. And we got some new tests out here to prove it, right? We got some tests that they're funded by Gates and Soros. They're going to prove we got a surge. Going to have to lock you down. It's all about the testing. All about the testing. I talked to Rabbi Dovid Smith out of New York. They've been fighting this going back to 2019 when they took away medical and religious exemptions for students at private schools, at private religious schools. Remember that? I played that many times. You know, just got to get the
they
shot.
They have to get the shot, vaccination.
Well, that was about taking away your religious and medical exemptions to get measles shots, to prevent measles. Oh, you got to do it. Everybody's going to die. He knows better than that. He's older than me. We didn't take measles shots. We got measles and we got lifetime immunity. So that was about taking away the exemptions. And so Rabbi Smith, when I talked to him, he said, no, what this is really about now, this is all about the test. The test is how they're going to be able to lock away anybody they don't like, even if you're not sick. But wait a minute, I feel perfect. No. You're sick. I know it. See, my test here says so. You believe these tests? As a matter of fact, have you noticed the silence of the mainstream media about the fact that we had 2.2 million tests recalled by just one manufacturer? There's 59 different manufacturers. Just one of them recently had 2.2 million recalled. Why were they recalled? They were giving false results. All of the false results were false positives, not a single false negative. These things are preloaded when they went out. The other thing that bothers me about all this stuff, and you understand how they're using the test, they're going to use it to isolate and to lock people up. They're using it also to punish people who get their exemption because they are afraid to just thumb their nose at religious exemptions since we have so many different laws. I mean, if they were to do that, it would be quite obvious to everybody that we're living under a dictatorship. I mean, you got the First Amendment, you got the Religious Restoration Freedom Act, you got the 1963 Civil Rights Act, and you got multiple labor laws. If they were to just wipe the board clean, knock over the table, and say, none of that applies anymore, then everybody would understand what's happening. And so they're playing along with that, and then they're setting up a system where they punish you. They ostracize you. They isolate you. They test you. And then they're going to start charging you for the test. Because there's a lot of these small companies that are saying, look, I'm going to stand up for my people because I can't afford to pay for these tests on a regular basis. When they start to charge you for the tests, you can't afford it either. It's going to be a massive pay cut because of the frequency at which they're going to do it. And they can go to a daily test. As a matter of fact, that's what GoatTree was telling me before this stuff even hit. He said, a couple of years ago, GoatTree contacted me and said, we're getting a lot of buzz about Dark Winter 2. Mm. And then a couple of months before even the lockdown, he says, look at this, the green wristband that I showed. A daily test for you to be able to travel and so forth. This is where they're headed. Now, there's a lot of people who have had it with this, and we understand that, and we see Biden walking around and Fauci walking around, not even wearing a mask, pressing the flesh, massive crowd, face-to-face, nobody wearing a mask. They don't believe it. We don't believe it. Now it's just an issue of compliance. The emperor has no clothes and has no basis for a face mask even, certainly not for a vaccine mandate. But they're going to push it, say, oh, we got cases that are going up. Be the easiest thing in the world for them to do. Austria on Friday reimposed a full winter lockdown. Neighboring Germany warned that it will soon follow suit. So in Vienna, they had over 10,000 protesters, took to the street, thousands more, march in Amsterdam. You can understand that these numbers are going to be on the low side. Absolutely going to be on the low side. Let me show you a little bit of the violent protests, and then we'll take a look at the more peaceful protests. Here's a violent protest. This is in Rotterdam on Friday night. You hear the shots that are happening there. And there's a guy going down. You heard that shot? And the guy drops to the pavement. They caught that on video. The police just started shooting. This is an aerial shot. Kind of give you an overview of the crowd. Everybody running, total chaos there. Fires in the street, burning vehicles happening in the street. So, this is what happened with the violence that's there. The Dutch police opened fire on lockdown protesters. Some people describe the scene as an orgy of violence. That's the mayor who described it that way. He added that people were injured, that officers shot at protesters, although he could not provide information to the extent of the injuries. Some of the people who had banners and were marching peacefully, and there were many peaceful marches, of course. The places where it blew up in violence in Rotterdam and Belgium, those are going to get most of the press coverage. There were a lot of peaceful protests that happened. They don't get as much coverage. In Rome, where there was a peaceful protest, one banner said, "People like us never give up." It was a banner in the red, white, and green colors of the Italian flag. Virtually no one at the Rome protest wore a protective mask, says the Daily Mail, and they're not happy about that. Well, guess what? Fauci doesn't wear it. Biden doesn't wear it. Their supporters don't wear it. And their parties, they don't wear it. They don't even pretend to believe this stuff anymore. Why should we? In Switzerland, 2,000 people protest an upcoming referendum on whether to approve the government's COVID-19 restriction law, claiming it was discriminatory. In Croatia, thousands gathered at the capital Zagreb, carrying Croatian flags, nationalist and religious symbols, along with banners against vaccination, what they describe as restrictions of people's freedoms. Tens of thousands of people rally in Europe, many, many more, quite frankly. And in Australia, what they say is, this is the headline from AFP, tens of thousands rally against COVID curbs in Europe and Australia. In Australia, it was more than a million, just in Australia. And I just read for you some of the countries where this happened. Let's take a look at this peaceful protest. This particular video goes through and has aerial shots with a drone flying over the crowd. And a lot of people say, oh, that's illegal, you can't do that. Well, you know, they don't necessarily have the FAA putting rules on them. Just understand that in many ways, we have more rules on us than the Australians do. But they have taken the lead and coming after them with a medical martial law. So these are aerial views of people in the streets, and then I'll read out to you the subtitles that they put there in the various areas, how many people they had in various cities. But over a million just in Australia alone, a country of about 27 million people. So it says, today, millions of Australians march for their freedom, as you see the drone flying over the people. Goes on to say 500,000 plus in Melbourne. This is all peaceful. These are people standing in the street. 300,000 plus in Sydney. You're up to 800,000. 250,000 plus in Perth. Now you're over a million right there. 150,000 in Brisbane, over. 100,000 in Adelaide. They keep showing 30,000 in Cairns, I think is the way that's pronounced. I'm not sure. And then here is Rome. This is at night. Everybody's holding their cell phones up like a concert. All peaceful. All peaceful. And let me just say that we have to do this peacefully. If we don't do it peacefully, they will use it against us. As I said before, that will be their excuse to bring in unlimited jackboot thuggery. If you want the future to be a boot stomping on your face forever, then get violent right now. That's just playing into their hands. And if you look at what is happening in Rotterdam and the Netherlands and stuff, you see what's happening as young males. I don't know what their ethnic background is, but as young males out there just, you know, doing what they want to do, using this as an excuse. Many of them are Marxist and they want this kind of blowback. As a matter of fact, you go back and you look at what a lot of Marxist terrorists have said in the past. They said, well, you know, we're doing this type of thing because we want the government to overreact and to establish a dictatorship. Because it's not just that it plays into the government's hands, it also plays into the Marxists' hands, the people who want to turn our governments into Marxist dictatorships. A few hundred people also marched through the northern Dutch city of Breda. They said they didn't expect violence after consulting with police. We certainly don't support what happened in Rotterdam, they said. We were shocked by it. In Italy, that picture that you just saw, the massive crowd there, that was 3,000 people that turned out at the capital's Circus Maximus, a field where in ancient times Romans staged popular entertainment. They were there to protest against the Green Pass certificates required at workplaces, restaurants, cinemas, theaters, sports venues, and gyms, as well as for long-distance train, bus, or ferry travel. Everything that's being done there is being done worldwide. Biden wants to do that here as well. They want to make vaccination a requirement for any kind of travel. The only reason they haven't done it yet is because they don't control private cars. They haven't figured out how to do that. But in Europe, it's much easier for them. They don't have private guns, and they don't have private cars. That creates a logistical issue for the tyrants in this country, the Quislings, who are working for the globalist Nazis, the Quisling government. What they don't mention in this is the fact that Italy has gone through and put on leave, and I don't know if it's paid or unpaid leave, people who are not vaccinated. You can't go to work. And that's more than 10% of the population. So it's actually surprising that it was only several thousand people who showed up. In Austria, about 40,000 came out to protest in central Vienna. They held up banners decrying the Corona dictatorship, slamming the division of society. the director of the World Health Organization's Europe region. Listen to this guy's name. I can't make this up. Dr. Hans Kluge. Now, Kluge is something we used to always refer to in engineering as this Rube Goldberg type of thing, right? It's a kludge. And this whole thing has been a kludge. And the other thing that I thought was funny was Hans has become kind of a nickname, right? Just like Karen has become a nickname for somebody who is a particular demographic who who's criticizing and yelling at people. Well, Hans has become kind of a code word for German authoritarian types. This guy's name is Dr. Hans Kluge. I say, Hans, are we the baddies? Anyway, he says said earlier this month that the region was, quote, back at the epicenter of the pandemic. Yeah, epicenter in the sense that it's being targeted by these globalist Nazis. That's how it is, the epicenter. Archbishop Vigano has called it out for exactly for what it is. This is an article on The New American. He's called on people of faith to unite in a world war against the New World Order. It is a defensive war. It is a just war. They initiated this, as I've said many times, this war against the people of the world conducted by each and every country's leaders against its own people. That is what's happening right now. And it began, as all wars typically do, with sanctions. In the modern world, they began with sanctions. In the ancient world, they began with sieges of city-states that had a castle. They would siege it, try to bring them to their knees through starvation. That is what is happening now. In modern world, what we do is we enact sanctions to bring people to their knees economically. And what is happening right now with the supply chain disruptions, with the lockdowns that happened under Trump in 2020, and let me say, it happened under Trump. He had a responsibility to stop it. You heard DeSantis say that last week. He said, look, these people who are under me, right, as governor, there are different lesser magistrates, and I'm not going to tolerate them putting on mask mandates and vaccine mandates on people. He said, you don't have a right to do wrong. It's just that simple. Trump should have done the same thing. I hear people all the time, well, it wasn't Trump. It was those bad Democrat governors. And I've gone to great lengths to talk about what Republican governors like Little, like DeWine in Ohio have done during that, and many others. I could go on and on, quite frankly. There's more examples of Republicans acting like Democrats than the other way around. Very rare that they push back. And usually when they do, it is simply virtue signaling. But the reality is that even if it were only the Democrats, where does Trump get off looking the other way? It's the same thing that this sorry Soros DA in San Francisco is doing when people go in and loot stores there. That's what Trump did. That's what Trump did all through 2020. Even worse, Trump gave money to the looters. He didn't just look the other way and do nothing. He gave money to the looters. He was organized. We got a story coming up here where they went in and they had 80 people attack a Nordstrom. And Trump, in this analogy, what Trump did was essentially equip them, right? He equipped these Democrat governors. It's the same as if he went in with this mob of 80 people who robbed Nordstrom and bought cars for them and bought guns for them. And then stood aside and let them do it and then didn't do anything at all. At the very least, what he could have done is pull back the money that he had given them, supposedly for an emergency, but he didn't do any of that. He was more than an accomplice. He was the producer. That's what you call the person in a film production that supplies the cash. They're the producer. He let Fauci direct it, but the producer credits go to Trump. And he still wants credit for producing the shot that was sent around the world, the Trump shots. He wants it so badly. And the people who are so blindly partisan will not give him the credit. Archbishop Vigano calls it out for what it is, a global coup d'etat. And Trump, of all people, was at the very center of it. Because if you're a clever Satanist like these people are, what are you going to do? You're going to put somebody in position who whines and complains and talks and screams loudly about being a nationalist when in actuality, he's a globalist, enabling, producing, funding it. A global coup d'etat is taking place, said Archbishop Vigano. It is affecting a great reset toward a new world order. If the attack is global, the defense must also be global. And so what he has released is an op-ed piece entitled Appeal for an Anti-Globalist Alliance. He says this, for 2 years now, we've been witnessing a global coup d'etat in which a financial and ideological elite has succeeded in seizing control of part of national governments, public and private institutions, the media, the judiciary, the politicians, and religious leaders. All of these, without distinction, have become enslaved to these new masters who ensure power, money, and social affirmation to their accomplices. Fundamental rights, which up until yesterday were presented as inviolable, have been trampled underfoot in the name of an emergency.
Emergency! Everybody to get from street!
That's right. We should laugh at these people when they tell us it's an emergency. That's why I play that all the time, so you can laugh at these people. I want you, whenever you hear some pundit, if it's Francis Collins or if it's Fauci or if it's Gottlieb or if it's some politician, and they say this is an emergency, I want you to immediately hear this in your mind.
To get from street.
And you can just say that back to the, thank you to the listener who sent that in to me. That's from The Russians Are Coming, The Russians Are Coming. That was another emergency, right? This global coup d'etat, says Archbishop Vigano, deprives citizens of any possibility of defense, since the legislative, executive, and judicial powers are complicit in the violation of law, in the violation of justice, and the violation of the purpose for which they exist. It is a global coup d'etat because this criminal attack against citizens extends to the whole world with very rare exceptions. It is a world war where the enemies are all of us, even those who unwittingly have not yet understood the significance of what is happening. It is a war fought not with weapons, but with illegitimate rules, with wicked economic policies, and with intolerable limitations of natural rights. Supranational organizations, financed in large measure by the conscriptors of this coup d'etat, are interfering in the government of individual nations and in the lives, relationships, and health of billions of people. They are doing it for money, certainly, but even more so, in order to centralize power so as to establish a planetary dictatorship. And let me just say, this is not hyperbole. This is not a conspiracy theorist. Theory. This is Archbishop Vigano. And in the Roman Catholic Church, this pope has put in, one of the first things that he did was his climate encyclical. Now, this is not something that has ever been the concern of, and certainly isn't the rightful concern of any religious leader. It's not true. But the person that he had write this encyclical on the climate was John Schellenhuber, a guy who is a radical, he's pushing for radical reduction, depopulation, right? This is somebody who has also pushed along, he's also been an advisor to Prince Charles, this Schellenhuber guy, for his Earth League, where they want to have a planetary court system, a planetary legislative system, a planetary government. This is not hyperbole. This is not an imagination. This is not, well, this is the direction that they're headed. No, they have announced that is the plan, just as they've announced the Great Reset, just as they announced the UN 2030 agenda. The global governance is all there. And it is allied with people like Prince Charles, people like this Pope, Francis. Anyway, he says it's a great reset of the World Economic Forum, the Agenda 2030 of the UN. It is the plan of the New World Order in which a universal republic enslaves everyone and a religion of humanity cancels faith in Christ. Well, I would just say that's not a religion, of maybe that's lost in translation. Humanism, secular humanism, which transhumanism grows out of. He goes on to say this then. So that's the problem. And he makes a a good summary of that. He says, I call upon rulers, political and religious leaders, intellectuals, and all people of goodwill, inviting them to unite in an alliance which launches an anti-globalist manifesto, refuting point by point the errors and deviations of the dystopia of the New World Order, and proposing concrete alternatives for a political program. Inspired by the common good, the moral principles of Christianity, traditional values, the protection of life and the natural family, and the protection of business and work, the promotion of education and research, and respect for creation. This is not really hard to do. So we can lay out the principles very easily. It's just hard to get people to obey this. And even though we lay these things out, and it is important for us to lay these things out because people need to have a vision of where they're going. This is one of the reasons why the founders of this country laid out the Declaration of Independence. They were not a rabble mob, as we saw happening in Rotterdam. They did this, and it's important to understand that peasant revolts do not work. It's one of the key takeaways from Matt Truella, or just out of history. But he points that out, the historical fact that peasant revolts fail. If you want to have any chance of success, you have to do it with lesser magistrates. You have to organize and have a government, principles, and that's going to require a declaration of principles, a declaration of statements, a vision of what this is, and have people who are going to stand in the leadership position. That's what the founding of this country was about. They will always portray them, be portrayed by the people that are trying to, that have the people who are abusing their authority. They will always portray them as rebels. They'll always portray them as rabble. But it's important that you have an organized opposition to this of lesser magistrates. As a matter of fact, this week is Thanksgiving. We'll be talking a little bit about what the real Mayflower Compact was. It was unique in the sense, and in a sense, it kind of laid a foundation for the Declaration of Independence. It was going to happen about 150 years after that, because as they went to a situation where it was completely unanticipated and they didn't have any rules to govern them because they weren't where they were supposed to be, they voluntarily came together with rules for their society. And folks, that's where we are in 2021. That's where we were in 2020, quite frankly, but everybody was too afraid and locked down to even go back and celebrate 400 years of people coming to this country for religious freedom and to establish their families and to have independent, free lives. That was the fundamental motivating factor. They weren't trying to get rich. If they wanted to get rich, they would have stayed in Holland. They wanted to get out of there. Why? Because it was a wealthy country. It was a country that said, yeah, do whatever you want. We're open to anything. And they said, well, we don't really want our kids living in that kind of libertine environment. We're afraid that's going to take them away from Christ. And they couldn't go back to England because of the persecution from the government there. Because there was a unification of church and state. That's why what Flynn said is so incendiary and should have gotten a lot more attention. When Flynn says, well, you know, we got one nation under God. The only way we're going to have one nation under God is to have one religion in this nation. Let me tell you, that is one of the most egregiously wrong things I've heard anybody in the public square say. If you want to combine government with religion, we've seen how that works out. It's given, and rightfully so, Christianity a black eye for what happened. But what happens with that is it is a corruption of Christianity when you bring that in. We have all kinds of religious structures in many different denominations that have absolutely nothing to do with following Christ. These are man-made things, but when you combine, and that's one aspect, one issue of that, but when you combine those man-made religious structures with government, oh, you wind up with a multi-headed monster. And that's what they understood when they established religious freedom here in America. But again, we don't want to have an official church, but we want to have society influenced with a moral foundation. We should be the ones who are leading. We should be the ones who are showing the way in what we should be doing with our family and how we treat our fellow man. And we should take the leadership in that. Instead, we have allowed other people to take that leadership. We have abdicated our position as Christians to people who are not suited for doing that. And look at the mess that we have in government today. Anyway, he goes on to say, agreement, this alliance that he wants to see happen, will have to denounce the crimes of the elite, identify those responsible, denounce them to international tribunals, and limit their excessive power and harmful influence. This is one of the reasons why I wanted to talk, and I will talk more about RFK Jr.'s book about Fauci. And by the way, I was happy to see that it hit number one on the Amazon bestseller list. That's good news, because that is a very detailed book. And so that's the first part of this. We know who he is, and we need to identify his crimes. And that's just under a 500-page book that identifies a very long criminal career by Anthony Fauci in great detail. The next thing that needs to happen is he needs to be denounced to an international tribunal, because the crimes of Fauci, of Biden, of Trump, and both of these administrations are crimes against humanity and many other administrations throughout the world, but especially in America, because we developed the vaccine, the primary vaccines that are being used. Others have been developed. The UK developed AstraZeneca, Russia, China, they developed some vaccines. They're different from the ones that we did. So you have to denounce them to international tribunals, limit their power and their harmful influence. Well, that's not a difficult thing to do. I mean, you can write that law. I could write that in 5 minutes. It's just getting that enacted. And now with the people who have ulterior motives working against us, it will not be easy to get that enacted. It'll be easy to formulate, but not to enact it. Fighting against the corruption of state officials and those who work in the information industry. And then freezing the capital that has been used to destabilize the social order. He's absolutely right. The information industry, we should call it the disinformation industry. It's always been a danger that the press has always been taken over for these purposes of these wars, for propaganda. The first casualty is the truth, right? We have seen that. Especially with looking at the 20th century, Edward Bernays lying us into World War I because Woodrow Wilson wanted it. And then, of course, he plied his trade on Madison Avenue selling products and honed that into a science. It was actually his work that was studied by the Nazis, by Goebbels and others. He did most of the fundamental stuff, and did it the best. But now it has taken another step, and that is, not only is it massive propaganda, but it's massive propaganda that is visceral, as they exclude anything that disagrees with him. And so that last step that he mentioned here is freezing the capital of these corporations that are engaged in criminal behavior. Now, that's going to take somebody who's a strong executive at the top. I honestly don't see that happening. I think this is going to have to be from the bottom up. I think this is going to be more like individual communities that come together and protect each other and then start to network if they're successful and start to build from the grassroots up. I think that's what's going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen from the top down. It's going to have to be found. It's going to have to be built on a foundation of mutual respect for our individual human rights that comes from the kinds of Christian values that established this country as part of the Mayflower Compact. We need to return to that, but it's going to have to be based on that. If we're going to make this about one party or the other, we've lost already. If we're going to make it about money, we've lost already. We've been watching this type of thing play out. I've been watching it my entire life. the Republicans make it about lower taxes or less regulation or this or that. Again, in Austria, before this happened, the day that these riots began in Austria, of course, the riots were in the Netherlands and Austria. You had some police officers, again, Nie wieder Fascism, right? Fascism never again was what they were holding up. Austria has been just into the forefront of the media, writes the Free Thought Project. Their society is being split in two. The vaccinated are allowed to have rights while the unvaccinated are confined to their homes. Right? They're trying to build up wrath against the unvaccinated. And they're doing a pretty good job of that in the media. And if they continue to build this kind of hatred, and we've already seen this happening now by based on skin color, you're going to wind up with a big Kristallnacht. But it'll be targeted towards the unvaccinated. They have repeatedly created this false narrative that people are getting sick and dying simply because of the unvaccinated. If they make the unvaccinated the virus, and that's easy to do because they were able to lock down the entire world when there was no pandemic virus, they can lock down the unvaccinated if they label us as the pandemic virus. It's just that simple. Predictably, the lockdowns of the vaccinated have not curbed the increases in cases, writes Free Thought Project. And the Austrian Chancellor, Schallenberg, is now going to a countrywide lockdown. Thankfully for the Austrian people, however, as the French newspaper Info du Jour reports. That's funny. What do we have on the menu here? Well, we have Info du Jour. Not all of their law enforcement is made up of unquestioning order followers, and many in the police and military refusing to follow these orders. The paper reports, quote, the police and the army refuse to control the health pass in the name of, quote, freedom and human dignity. You notice that? You notice how they go to freedom and dignity? B.F. Skinner knew that it was about freedom and dignity. That was the name of his book. When he talked about how we're going to take away what is unique for humans and we're going to treat each and every person like an animal, and we know how to control people's animal nature. This is why it is essential for us to fight this as a spiritual battle. The human nature can easily be controlled by these behavioral psychology techniques, easily controlled. Your human nature can be as easily controlled as a dolphin or a pigeon or a dog. This positive operant conditioning, negative operant conditioning, the two of those together, but especially the positive operant conditioning, where there's no punishment, but instead you get a reward. You get to work. You get to travel. You get to go to sporting events and to school. Just do this. That is the most dangerous thing, and that has been at play for the last 20 years at TSA, for example. Well, you let me put my hands on you. You let me run you through this thing here. You let me do this to you, do that to you, and here you go. Now you can go fly. Yay, immediate reward. Everything is there except for a little clicker treat, right? You know, that's what they do with a clicker training for dogs based on B.F. Skinner stuff. You click and treat, click and treat, click and treat. They associate that with the food response. It's like Pavlovian thing. And then, you know, when the dog does the right behavior or the dolphin does the right behavior, you click and you treat. And it's like, oh, that's what he wanted me to do. Okay. And so after a while, they get so accustomed to it, they actually start, in the terms of the behavioral psychologists, they actually start throwing behaviors at you. How about this? You want me to do that? Well, let's try this. You know, the smart animals like the dolphins. And then after a while, they say, thanks for all the fish, so long. They head off, as in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Anyway, the reason I mentioned that, and the reason that we have to understand this is about taking away our human freedom and our human dignity. It is appealing to our flesh nature, you understand, as a Christian, right? And as a Christian, you understand you have a flesh nature and you have a spiritual nature. You must overcome the physical nature. Your spiritual nature must overcome it. And you're not going to do that without the power of Christ. It just isn't going to happen. But that's the battle. It's a spiritual battle. You're not going to beat these people who are masters at manipulating the physical unless you transcend it with the spiritual. And that will happen only with the power of Christ. They will join a large demonstration against compulsory confinement on November the 20th in Vienna, they said in the French newspaper, and that was some of the police who were protesting on that. I don't know if that happened. I haven't seen a report of that. We'll have to see in a follow-up if that did happen. I hope it did. Meanwhile, again, as I pointed out over the weekend, we had demonstrations in Austria, Croatia, Italy, Northern Ireland, the UK, France, Germany, the Netherlands. We had demonstrations in Canada. We had well over a million people. I think we'll probably total that up. It was probably past 1.5 million people in Australia, in Japan, even in the U.S. And you notice what did not happen in Australia? Violence. See, the beginning of the pushback, when it was anger, you know, just eruption of anger, there was a lot of violence. We showed you the pictures of that. And and I think they understood very quickly that that wasn't nearly as powerful. And so subsequent to that, in the following weeks, you had bigger crowds that showed up. And to their credit, they came out there with people playing violins. You know, we're humans. We're not animals. See, we can play violins. And we understand transcendent principles. And he turned around, this one guy who was a former police officer, he turned around with his back to the crowd and he addressed the police officers behind them and he said, "You are going to be one of us at the end of the day. Your children are going to be like us. And what you're doing to us, you're doing to yourself and to your children. What are you going to tell your children? Are you going to tell them when they look back on this history? Which side are you going to be on?" And so they did that type of thing, and that was very, very powerful. And the police stood down that weekend. They did it the next weekend, and the police didn't even show up because they didn't want to be embarrassed. And so now we've seen several weeks of people showing up by the hundreds of thousands in city after city in Australia. And it is very important for us to do that peacefully. I can't stress that enough. Do not take the bait. When we look at what happened when the wall came down in East Germany, that was something that began with weekly meetings and singing at a church. They were singing hymns and so forth, and then they would go on peaceful marches, and it got bigger and it got bigger and it got bigger, and then one day they marched to the wall and the soldiers refused to shoot them. And that's what it's going to take to push back against this. And I've been saying that since before Trump incentivized it and made it, quote unquote, legal with his so-called emergency. I said, we have to stand up. And I said, the best place that can be done is to rally around the churches. The churches, if the churches had stood up last year and had refused this, many of them didn't understand what was going on. And then by the middle of the summer, they started to catch on. And they went back to church, but many of them did not the entire time. And now you're seeing a situation where about 40% of pastors, and that's probably in these churches that did not open up, these, lack of a better term, we'll call them liberal churches, that do not, you know, they're social organizations, quite frankly. And they don't have a mission to worship God. And, you know, the term worship means worthy. They didn't think God was worthy enough to risk getting a cold. That's what eventually happened. But the people who did became targets, as you saw in Canada. As they met on a weekly basis, they were, without being explicit about it, they were implicitly showing that the emperor had no clothes, that the health dictators had no pandemic. They were showing by meeting week after week, violating all of the superstitious rituals that had been given to us by our new overlords, they showed they were totally fake. Showing up in a group that has, you know, demographics that skew elderly, and it didn't happen. So they had to arrest the pastors in Canada. They had to seize the churches, the physical buildings. Well, they continued to meet, and they even put their stuff up on YouTube and other places. But here in America, they took a different tactic. Here in America, they just ignored that it was happening for the most part. most of the criticism, there wouldn't have been really any talk at all about what was happening, for example, in L.A. with John MacArthur's church there, 7,000 people. There was a little bit of talk at the beginning. They, you know, rattled their sabers there in L.A. County and said, well, we're going to, you know, hit you with big fines and all this other kind of stuff. And so they said, go ahead, we'll put the money in escrow, but we're going to continue to meet. And so they weren't happy about that. They were faced with a situation where they're going to have to go into a very large church and start arresting people as they're standing up there peacefully preaching. They don't want that. See, that's what they can't do. That is kryptonite to them. Now, if the church had gotten together and done what, it's almost funny to laugh at it, but, you know, this is the way they try to portray the church. Imagine if the church of 7,000 people had gone through L.A. and started turning cars over, setting them on fire and smashing windows and attacking the police and so forth. Well, then that church would have been shut down. Everybody would have said, good, I'm glad you shut them down. But they didn't do that. They just quietly did not comply. And by doing that, that was a very powerful example. That's why I tell you, do not take this bait. And do not take the bait from people on social media who taunt you and say, oh, you're a coward. You know that there's only one solution. I get those kind of people all the time. They probably work for a three-letter agency in Washington, D.C., quite frankly. I mean, don't dismiss that. I'm seriously telling you that. Because take a look. And what happened in Michigan? Take a look at what happened on January the 6th. They deliberately set this thing up and try to get somebody to engage them and say, yeah, I agree with you or whatever. All right, boom, you're busted. That's the tactic that they try to do. But we don't agree with them because that's a foolish thing to even want that. And if you do want it, you better, I hope you don't enact it. And I hope you keep quiet about it, because if you do enact it, then they're going to use that to attack everybody, just as they had that tiny, tiny handful of people at January the 6th, using that to demonize everybody. And that happened because there was no real, there was no organization to stop that type of thing from happening. All the organization was about getting money and getting press. They didn't do anything about security. And I told you that was going to happen. I told you for weeks. I got fired because I was telling people on Alex's network that what he was doing was going to lead to January the 6th. I got fired for doing that. And I talked about it up to the very day that it happened. You could see that that was going to be a disaster. So don't take this bait. We'll never give up. Protests erupt across the world over COVID tyranny. That's right. Don't give up, but don't fight their battle. Unvaccinated, by the way, as one news organization is pointing out, and as a matter of fact, what was it? It was AP, Associated Propaganda. They're kind of scratching their head and saying, you know, this is kind of strange that in Africa, and it's not just Africa, it's a lot of different places where they have not had this worldwide cases outbreak. They're not having surging cases. They're not having anything. Nothing. Why? Well, because, and this is the elephant in the room, if you look at these poor countries, you look at Africa typically, whenever there is some kind of a pandemic, where does it usually start? It starts in these poor countries where they have poor health care, poor hygiene, and they have little to no medical care. But in this particular so-called pandemic, all of that worked to their advantage. They were so poor, they couldn't buy these toxic spike protein genetic code injections. That was a big part of it. They couldn't afford to buy it, so they didn't get it. There's other very, very cheap medication that's out there, and you saw this. It's not just in Africa, in India as well. Poor areas where they had tremendous number of people. The government couldn't afford to give them the vaccine, so what did they do? Well, the only thing we can give you is ivermectin. Boom, they didn't have a problem. And that's what's happening in Africa. The very fact that you have the poorest areas where there is no hygiene, where there's no hygiene and there's nothing and no vaccines, and they're not getting sick, what does that tell you? This is all, this pandemic is a pandemic of the vaccine. It's just that simple. That's what it is. It is a bioweapon, as Dr. Peter McCullough accurately described it. And this is a guy, credentials longer than most of these BLM people's rap sheets, much longer. And somebody who has treated a lot of patients, somebody who has had it himself, somebody who is a cardiologist. And so he says this is a bioweapon, and he's right. It trains your body to make something that is highly toxic. That is not a vaccine. That is not a vaccine. Vaccines try to train your immune system, your natural immune system. They try to train it with something that is dead or weakened. This is not there to train your immune system. This is to hijack your body and make your body produce something that is highly toxic, to produce a pathogen. This is worse than an infection. This is a hijacking to make you manufacture a pathogen. So, in unvaccinated Africa, there have been no lockdowns, very few COVID cases, and deaths are a tiny fraction of those in Europe and the U.S. per capita. The catastrophic scenario that everybody's wringing their hands about in the developed world is not happening there. They're going to have different ways, and they've always had different ways, to rob the people in Africa. But this is set up to rob the people in America and Western civilization, in the first world. This is what this is about. This is a pandemic to rob us. They've got other ways to rob Africa. The AP admits, Associated Press, Associated Propagandists, admit that the case of Africa is too significant to ignore. They note the fact that it, by and large, managed to escape, seeing a deep impact by the pandemic, leaving scientists and health experts baffled. They said, but there's something mysterious going on in Africa that is puzzling scientists. It's baffling, it's mysterious, it's puzzling. No, it's not. It's pretty obvious. Africa doesn't have the vaccines and the resources to fight COVID that they have in Europe and the U.S., but somehow they seem to be doing better. It couldn't possibly be the vaccine, could it? It couldn't possibly be the fact that lockdowns and masks, they're not wearing masks, they're not locked down. Fewer than 6% of the people in Africa are vaccinated. For months, the WHO has described Africa as, quote, one of the least affected regions in the world, unquote, in its weekly pandemic reports. But the problem is, and this is a problem for the globalists, Pfizer is so greedy that they won't release free vaccines. And so what you wind up with here is a big control group in Africa. And that's what's there. Just as we had control groups in the various churches, the big churches and the small churches, various places, they've now got a big control group in Africa. Greece is going to ban all the unvaxxed from indoor spaces. In Croatia, the people are chanting, "We are not giving you our children." So with all of this happening, we have Fauci saying he only wears a mask with people that he doesn't trust. And this happened in a meeting. This is from the left press. The story is actually on WND Politico, citing the Washington Post writer and author Sally Quinn. And Quinn is was married to the Washington Post editor Ben Bradley until his death. And so she writes that she was at a party where Fauci was. She writes it in the Washington Post. It's quoted by Politico. She said, Fauci was at a book party last Tuesday night for Jonathan Karl, where the White House coronavirus advisor was taking his mask off and on, depending on whom he was around. Now, that's what they say, but listen what the truth is. So Quinn said, she asked him, why are you holding your mask at a party where guests have to show proof of vaccination? He said, I said to him, you seem pretty ambivalent about your mask because nobody else is wearing one. And he said, I just decided that if anyone came up here that I didn't know, I'd put my mask back on. Oh, so he's, even though, right, they're checking everybody. Everybody's got to have a vaccine passport in order to get into this party. But he's going to base it, he says, on whether or not he knows you personally. I mean, they've already checked it with a double mask. That doesn't make any sense, does it? But then Quinn says this. She says there was a lot of paparazzi around trying to catch him without a mask on. And he's being safe, she said. He's being safe not about the virus, but he's being safe about showing that he, virtue signaling, that he really believes these rules when he doesn't believe the rules. It was all done for show. That's why he had it there. So if he thinks he's going to get his picture taken, he's going to put it on. And we've seen this from him for about 616 days. We've seen that kind of hypocrisy. First, he wasn't doing it. First, we don't need masks. They've never, they don't work. And that was what the science was. And it's like, wait a minute, we could use this. When he was saying that, by the way, I was having arguments with Mike Adams, Natural News, and he was saying, he's screaming at Fauci, you better get everybody wearing masks. I said, they're not going to work. They can't possibly work. We've got a long history of this. That is one thing that doesn't work. Anyway, she goes on to say, Quinn said, he knew that everybody was vaccinated. If it was someone that we knew, he would trust them. And if it was somebody else, he didn't, even though they were double vaccinated. It just happened to be, whoever he knew. Yeah, this pandemic is really kind of about who you know, isn't it? It's not what you know. It isn't about a virus. It's about who you know. And let's go back and take a look. Remember what happened when you had the reporter confront the idiots on The View? And basically what they do is they give us a view into the mass psychology of fear and obsession. And so she confronted them with the truth, which has now been acknowledged by many sources, been acknowledged by The Lancet, the big medical journal in the UK, as well as by the CDC's Rochelle Walensky. And I've got a clip of that in here. I just want to play this again for you. Listen to this at The View, the reporter saying why she is not getting the vaccine. It's personal. She's got a personal medical risk for this. She's also had it and recovered. She says, I've had multiple doctors talk about how I've got antibodies and so forth, but they went apoplectic when she said, it doesn't make any difference for transmission. It doesn't affect anybody else.
But the vaccine does not prevent you from getting COVID and does not prevent you from transmitting COVID.
Oh, my
COVID.
Goodness.
Reality,
well,
no, and we have
that's
seen that.
Not so. Come on.
No,
you've been at Fox TV too long.
Heretic. Burn her. She's a witch.
You don't have to listen to me. You can listen to the director of the CDC.
Come on.
You-
Our vaccines are working exceptionally well. They continue to work well for Delta with regard to severe illness and death. They prevent it. But what they can't do anymore is prevent transmission.
You can look at the CDC's website. That is why masks were reinstated for people who were vaccinated, because they said, and they admitted, they came out and said, this Delta variant, transmission is going to be a thing for vaccinated and unvaccinated people.
Okay. And, yeah, it's all about transmission, isn't it? Oh, wait, it's not. It's not about that. And the vaccines don't do anything about that. And I'll carry the mask, depending on who's taking my picture. Governor Youngkin, as I reported last week in Virginia, it was a big victory, wasn't it? Oh, we got a Republican in there. Except what happens is, as is usually the case, you've only got Democrats on the ballot. One of them had an R behind his name, but he was a Democrat. As Vince Agnelli in Virginia pointed out, he said, look, the Republicans are not even trying to win this situation. The last couple of elections, they didn't even field enough candidates to have a majority. If they won every one of their candidates that they fielded won, they still wouldn't have had a majority. They just turned it over to the Democrats. And with this guy who was running, Youngkin, he says he's not going to block local mask mandates. He's not going to block vaccine mandates. He said localities are going to have to make decisions the way the law works, and that's going to be up to individual decisions. But again, from the governor's office, you won't see mandates from me. He portrays himself as somebody who believes that individuals ought to have that decision, yet that's not what's happening. What he's doing is he is giving arbitrary power to individuals and the government to dictate this one-size-fits-all solution to everybody else. It's the exact opposite of individual decisions. See how they spin this, how they invert this, how they lie? It's absolutely amazing. he called himself a staunch supporter of the vaccine. Oh, yes, he is. He says, my family's gotten it. I've gotten it. I think it's the best way for people to protect themselves. Well, if you want to protect yourself, just understand it ain't going to be one. It isn't going to be two. It's going to be now three real soon. This is what Scott Gottlieb, and Scott Gottlieb was the first FDA commissioner. He got out just before all this stuff happened and went to Pfizer. And then he was replaced in the Trump administration by Hahn. And then Hahn left after the Trump administration left. And he went to work for Moderna. And so here's what Scott Gottlieb was saying on the Sunday show yesterday.
You've already seen governors in Connecticut and New Mexico say three doses is fully vaccinated. Should the CDC say you need a booster to be considered fully vaccinated?
I think at some point they're going to, but not this year. I think eventually this will be considered a three-dose vaccine, but I would be hard-pressed to believe CDC is going to make that recommendation anytime soon, in part because of this debate about whether or not younger people who are at less risk should be receiving that third dose. In states where governors are looking to do this, and I think some local communities will do it, some businesses are probably going to do it quite soon, I think in cases where entities are going to mandate three doses for people who are 6 months out from the second dose, they're doing that because they're using the vaccine as a way to control transmission and try to end this pandemic. And, you know, there are people in the public health community who don't think that that's an inappropriate way to use the vaccine. But this is a debate that's going on right now in the public health community. And CDC's sort of stuttering approach to how they've embraced boosters is reflective of that debate.
Now, buried in that information, very subtly, was he said they're using this, some of them see this as a way to control transmission. And there's a debate as to whether or not that works. In other words, he won't come out and say that the CDC itself, as you just heard, says that it's not a factor in transmission, that viral load is just as big and there's no difference in transmission whether you're vaccinated or unvaccinated. He won't say that. Oh, there's a debate that's going on there, and this is why they're using it. So, yeah, we're going to have more of that happening because the people who believe that it has something to do with transmission, they're going to follow that belief even if it's not based in science or rationality, and they're going to impose that belief on other people because they have the power to do that. There's an article on The American Thinker. You can also find it on Zero Hedge. The Utter Orwellian Stupidity of Masks on Airplanes. It's written by an MD. Dr. Jeffrey Bark. He says there's no studies to show that wearing a mask on an airplane can stop a respiratory viral illness. Just stop and think about this, right? You're all breathing the same air for hours in this little enclosed place. Now, I've flown on planes for a long time, and I remember when we had smoking and non-smoking sections, and it didn't matter whatsoever. I mean, you know, if you got somebody at the front of the plane that is smoking, and if you're in the back of the plane, you're going to be smelling that smoke. So just think about that. Because as I've shown you over and over again, I've shown you pictures of people who inhale some smoke and they put the mask on and then they blow the smoke out and you see it coming through the mask and around the edges of the mask and everywhere. That's smoke. Smoke particles are, I forget what the multiple was now, but it was hundreds or thousands of times bigger than the viral particles. It is nothing but a superstition. This is like if Fauci told everybody, all right, when you go into a place of work or if you go into a restaurant, before you're seated, you're going to have to knock on wood. So we're going to have everybody at the front of the restaurant. We're going to put out wood platforms. And so when you come in, you'll knock on wood, and then you'll be seated, and you'll be fine. And that's what this guy is saying. He says, where do we get this idea that you got to wear a mask to get a seat at a table, and then you can sit there for hours without it on? And he says, the same thing is happening, of course, in airplanes. You know, you can sit there for a very long time without your mask on while you eat and drink. If you milk it too long, then they'll get in an argument with you, and they might hit you with tens of thousands of dollars. But he goes, if they really believe this, he said, we would expect pilots to be wearing the mask while they're in the cockpit, but they don't. Did you realize that? They don't make the pilots wear the masks in the front of the cockpit. I mean, you don't want them to, you know, get a headache or pass out from oxygen deprivation. You don't want them to not see a warning light because the thing is over their eyes or whatever. I mean, you know, come on. That's the only thing about this that makes any sense. Is that they don't make the pilots wear it. He said, if mask wearing on an airplane was critical to preventing the spread of the disease, then why can't we remove them for extended periods of time? Why can we do that in a restaurant? And of course, from the very beginning of this, not only did we see the pictures of the smoke passing through, and we know by definition what the size of viral particles are. We know by definition what the masks are capable of stopping. Then I'm talking about N95 masks, but to make it very, very obvious to you, this is nothing but superstition. The cloth masks are allowed. This is nothing but genuflexing to a superstitious insanity. And that's why I was adamant that I would not ever put one of those things on to get a table. I would argue with the guy at the front. I would argue. I'd say, bring me the owner. And I'd have an argument with the owner, but I would not sit down in a restaurant that required that. And I won't ever go back to any of those restaurants. I'm going to have to move because there's no restaurants I can go to anymore. But because they were all buying into this. CDC recently acknowledged that it doesn't have any data showing that naturally immune COVID-recovered people can get and spread the disease to others. And since, says this doctor, since the CDC is requiring these measures, you would think that it would have a mountain of evidence to support such a draconian policy, but it doesn't. In fact, the science shows just the opposite. It shows that natural immunity is strong, durable, broad-based, and so forth. And then he finishes with this. He said, I had chickenpox as a child. I got it because my mom walked my brother and me down the street to a neighbor's house where the kid who lived there had the illness. Our dad, a physician, wanted to have us exposed and to deal with the disease under controlled conditions and when it is mild. In other words, while we're children. This was about 1970, prior to the chickenpox vaccination being available. And this is why I say, and why I was so furious about the removal of religious and medical exemptions by Trump when he said, oh, it's going around, they got to get it. I'm older than this guy, and we had those diseases, and we did that type of thing. Matter of fact, Karen's family, she's got a twin brother, and she's got a couple of brothers that are older and younger than her. So they had four kids in about a period of 3 years. And so when somebody down the street would get something, their mom would take them down to make sure they all got it at the same time instead of going through this sequentially. So-and-so's got the measles. You haven't had the measles? Let's go get this. Let's check this box off. That was the world we lived in. That was the world that Donald Trump lived in as well. There was no excuse for what he pulled. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
All right, let's take a look at the, we've talked about the protests, some of them peaceful, many of them peaceful, most of them peaceful. They were mostly peaceful. How about that? Mostly peaceful protests, millions of people peacefully protesting this tyranny. We had the attack at the Christmas parade that was incited, that was invited, that was pushed by MSNBC. These people have blood on their hands and dripping from their lips. But let's take a look at what happened with the attacks in terms of criminal attacks at retail stores in California. So this is on Saturday night. About 80 looters in ski masks ransacked a Nordstrom location just outside of San Francisco in a scene described by witnesses as insane and like something out of a movie. Quote, we probably saw 50 to 80 people in ski masks, crowbars, and a bunch of weapons. They were looting the Nordstrom's right here, and I thought they were going to start beating cars. I had to start locking doors, lock the front door, lock the back door, said a local P.F. Chang manager to the local press at KGO. They said it's unclear how much merchandise was stolen. NBC News reports that the police department there said one employee was pepper sprayed and two others were kicked and punched. They were treated on the scene and released. So this 80-strong mob that looted Nordstrom in the San Francisco area, the KGO said three arrested and a firearm recovered. This is, as Information Liberation points out, this is after the strong virtue signaling that we're on your side. It was done by Nordstrom back in May of 2020. They told the looting, violent, Black Lives Marxists, they told them at the time, you know, like so many of you, this is what Pete and Eric Nordstrom said in a statement that was on May 30th, 2020, endorsing Black Lives Marxists. They said, like so many of you, we've been deeply saddened and angered by recent events in our country. The senseless deaths of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, and too many others reflect the deeply ingrained racial prejudice and injustice that still exists in our communities today. They said that as the rioting was going on, to tell them that the rioting was justified. No, that's not the way that you fix anything. Whenever you start rioting and burning stores, you're not addressing the root cause, and you're not addressing the people who did it, and you're not fixing anything. What you're doing is you're creating a, you're just destroying things, and you're creating a much worse society. Destroying things in your own neighborhood. None of that makes any sense. So why would these elitist, detached capitalists jump in on this? Well, you just heard. Just look at the adjectives I used. They said, we need change. As a company, we know that we have an opportunity to make things better, which is why over the past several years, we've amplified our efforts when it comes to diversity, inclusion, and belonging at Nordstrom. It begins not only by speaking out, but by listening. Listening to our employees, our customers, our neighbors, as they share what it's like to be a person of color in our country today. And as a result, they basically have reaped what they have sown. If you're going to excuse this type of violence against other people who had not done anything to them, I mean, in a lot of cases, we're talking about, and I covered this, so many different individuals, small businesses owned by Black people that were looted, burned, smashed up. And they're like, what's going on? I didn't, you know, I'm Black myself. Why are you doing this to me? And that's what these elitists, Pete and Eric Nordstrom, they were throwing people like that under the bus. And that all happened as Democrats and Republicans were also throwing them under the bus simply because they were too small to protect, too small to fight back. We have to stand behind those who are too big to fail, too big to jail. They are essential, not you, not Main Street, not the middle class. No, you don't deserve to be around. So these people got burned and looted from the bottom for things that they didn't do. Regardless of what you think about any of these cases, the people who had their businesses burned down had nothing to do with it. And at the same time, the government, Republican and Democrat, shutting them down and destroying their lives, destroying their life's work. That's what's so tragic about last year. And now it is continuing. It went on to say, our employees, particularly through our employee resource groups, are critical voices as we continue to have conversations about these important topics. Our courageous conversation forums set up by our Black Employee Network have made a big impact on both of us. Evidently, the message didn't get out. Didn't work. Because you see, the problem is that it wasn't about racism at all. It was about Marxism. It was about a lawless criminal group. And they made it about racism. It wasn't about racism. It was about the ability to steal. And people who want to steal our society, that's the Marxists. And then you have individual freelance criminals like these who just looted the Nordstrom store. And then the night before, on Friday night, also in San Francisco, you had a Louis Vuitton store. It was a smash and grab. And what they did was they took the glass front of the store and just completely obliterated it. There was nothing left of the glass. And you could see, as a local reporter was showing video of that, you could see that they had emptied every single thing off of the shelves. I don't think it was a robbery. I think it happened while the store was closed. I'm not sure about that. I think it was more of a burglary rather than a robbery, you know, with people in there at the time. But people did see some of it happening. They called the police. The police were able to, stop at least one car. They said the Louis Vuitton store was not the only one that was hit, however. Officers are, quote, continuing to respond to other retail establishments. Reports of vandalism are occurring. And I've mentioned this. I mentioned it again this program. This is the perfect analogy for what has happened this last year to all of us. This is what government has allowed to happen. This is what government has incentivized to happen. We can all understand this. Conservatives can understand this when they look at San Francisco. And they can say, well, because you let these people go in and steal, and you said it's okay to go in and steal, then it just metastasizes. And that's exactly what happened as government at the state and local level was told by government at the federal level that you can steal the life work of people who have jobs and businesses and service businesses because they're too small. They're not essential. And we're going to let you steal. As a matter of fact, we're going to give you money and power to steal. And if you keep stealing and make this an emergency, we'll keep sending you money. And you can keep taking new powers and keep expanding your reach over every aspect of your life. This is what is happening. Our society is being looted, and it's being looted in a more dangerous way by the people at the top. That's even more dangerous than what's happening at this lower level. You know, many people say, a robber can steal your purse, they can steal your car or whatever. But a lawyer with a pen can take everything. He can take everything that you own. He can take the house. He can take the land that it's on with a pen. And with a pen, a president can sign an executive order declaring a national state of emergency and release money to people to incentivize this kind of theft of everything in our society. And he can give them a color of law justification for it. And that executive order is still in place 616 days later. So, and this is happening now. It's not just the Louis Vuitton store. It's not just Nordstrom. It's happening all over the place. They started out, and it's getting worse, just like this COVID theft is getting worse. It started out, it was just people going in the drugstore, getting $1,000 at a time and walking out, emptying that, coming back in, getting another $1,000. They couldn't do anything about it. If you tried to stop them, they would come after you. So if you try to stop this mask mandate, you try to stop these vaccine mandates, what do? They come after you, don't they? They're the criminals. So that is exactly what is happening to all of us. This comes as San Francisco is dealing with an uptick in organized retail theft across the city, causing several stores to permanently close, says ABC. And this is KGO-TV. Oh, really? It's just an uptick in organized retail. We don't know how this happened. This has nothing to do with a Soros DA, district attorney, was given money by Soros to win the election, a guy who was raised by Bill Ayers and these communists to do exactly this, to create chaos. And this is just one of the many district attorneys that have been put in across the country for this very purpose. Another one was the guy who let this guy with a long rap sheet out without bail on Friday night, and then on Sunday he drives his SUV through a parade of white people, he thinks. I guess he was going along until he could find a large group of white people that he could kill. No, it's not just an accident. This is all established. So same thing is happening in Chicago. What used to be known as the Miracle Mile. Very nice, very upscale retail stores. It's now all boarded up. When did that begin? Well, that began because they shut the stores down. Then the vacant stores got looted by Black Lives Marxists, who, again, were not protesting racism. They are just Marxists creating disorder and people who wanted to steal stuff. But again, it began because they shut these stores down. They were boarded up and vacant and an easy target. And now this type of thing, once this starts to happen, it's really hard to get control of this. Just like the wrenches that they threw into the supply chain, these are the wrenches that they have thrown. And I say they, I mean Bush, not Bush, Trump and Biden. It's hard to tell Trump, really, from the Bushes, isn't it? If you really pay attention. Different wars, different lies. This is a war that is going on against us. This is, in this particular case, in this war, the weapons of mass destruction were produced by Trump. The jabs, the genetic code injections. He produced the weapons of mass destruction. He lied about that, but he's still bragging about it. Some of the high-end retail shops that were hit in Chicago are, again, Louis Vuitton. What do they have that these people like so much? I don't know. I don't shop there, obviously. Fendi, I guess. I've not heard of that one. I've heard of Burberry. And Dolce and Gabbana, that's another one I don't know. It's probably handbags or something. I should have asked Karen. Well, we shouldn't shop at those stores either, believe me. She's So as the Conservative Treehouse says, how did ordinary American people become domestic terrorists in the eyes of the deep state? Well, I just told you. This was a plan. Holder, Obama, working with Soros to put in district attorneys and attorneys general all over the country. It was to allow that to happen and then to just label their political enemies. After you get to a certain state of corruption, which is where we are right now, anybody that disagrees with you, you label them as a political enemy, as a terrorist. But he does get to the solution. The writer for this, I don't have his name on this page, but this is from the conservativetreehouse.com, who writes this, and he does get to the source of this, which is, of course, the intelligence branch. They are the true government, and I'm glad that he recognizes that, finally. But he only sees it in the context of partisanship. He thinks that this all began with the moves against Trump. No, it just got really bold with the moves against Trump. And why did it get so bold in the moves against Trump? Well, you know, Trump didn't come on the scene until well after you had James Clapper talk about the fact that, we're not spying on Mr. and Mrs. America. No, we really aren't. And then he was exposed to have lied under oath. He committed perjury to the Congress. He lied to the American people about something that was very substantive, and he got away with it. Nobody ever came after him, not Republican and certainly not Democrat, for lying under oath. How does James Clapper get away with that? And it was immediately after he made that, after he stated that lie, that you had the release of documents from Snowden showing that he was lying. We all knew he was lying anyway. And eventually you had Michael Hayden say, well, I'm really angry at Ron Wyden. He knew, and his staff knew, and all the other senators and all their staff knew that that was being done. Why did he put him on the spot and make him lie like that? Well, because the American people needed to know. We needed to know that you are lying to us. And what the American people really needed was somebody who had the integrity to charge him with perjury. But, of course, they didn't, because you're not allowed to do that to the people who wield real power. As Chuck Schumer said, hey, CIA's got a lot of different ways they can come after Trump. And they did. In a lot of different ways. And what that showed us was just how corrupt they are. The intelligence branch works, number one, to control every other branch of government, he says. Number two, how it functions as an entirely independent branch of government with no oversight. He says, this is what I'm going to show you. Number three, how and why it was created to be independent from oversight. Yep, exactly. Everything's a national security secret. And now everything that every government agency does is treated as a national security issue, including things like the Pfizer documents. You see, the Pfizer documents are now being held for another 55 years. The FDA wants to keep that stuff classified. You've seen how in the EU, when some of these people finally pressed them for freedom of information requests, and they complied, supposedly, what they got back were documents that were totally redacted, just big black blotches on the page, wherever the paragraphs were. Everything now, and this is a common thing, whether you're talking about European governments or you're talking about the American government, everything is now a state secret. Everything is about the security of the state. We are not allowed to know anything. Everything is hidden from us, and they demand to know everything about us. This is the way that this works. So he says the intelligence branch is an independent functioning branch of government now. It is no longer a subsidiary set of agencies within the executive branch, as you might think. You've got to get rid of your elementary school civics class lessons. You know, forget about Schoolhouse Rock and how a bill is made. The government doesn't work that way anymore. It's evolved into something that is completely unlike anything you'll read about in the Constitution. It's important to know what's in the Constitution. It's a good plan for government. It could be improved in certain areas, primarily in more explicit and emphatic language, perhaps, but that's not the real issue with the Constitution. These things that have happened in the last few decades never happened before because we had a different class of people. It's the people that are the problem. That's why we have those like Mark Levin who are trying to push for a constitution of constitutional convention of states to rewrite the Constitution. They'll say, well, it's not to rewrite the Constitution. It's just to fix one or two flaws in there. No, no, no. You create that, you're going to rewrite the Constitution. The problem is not that what they want to have fixed isn't already there. The problem is that we don't have anybody who will obey what they swear an oath to follow. That's the problem. And those are the people who are going to be rewriting or amending the Constitution. So I'm off of that. I don't want to have anything to do with that. That is not the way that government works, but it's important to understand what the Constitution says so that you can understand who the lawless rebels are in Washington. Understand who they are. Understand they are the ones who have broken the law. They are the ones who have rejected authority, not you. And this is very important from a moral standpoint. The whole idea of the doctrine of the lesser magistrate is to take out administrators and people who are unfaithful stewards. We don't have a king. We don't have a divine right of kings. We don't have a hereditary king. And we don't elect a king to rule as an absolute monarch every 4 years. These people are stewards. Their authority comes based on their oath to uphold the Constitution. When they violate that oath, they no longer have authority. So it's important to know what the Constitution says so you know who the traitors are. The intelligence branch functions much like the State Department through a unique set of public and private partnerships that support it. Yeah, it's a fascist government, a merger of corporations and state. Big tech collaboration with intelligence operatives is a part of that functioning. They're almost like an NGO. That's right. That's exactly what it is. So his epiphany was 2016, and it's based on Trump. But it is much, much longer than that, and it is bipartisan. But hey, you know, if that wakes you up, that's good. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about how activist teachers are recruiting your kids. There's a couple of different articles that have surfaced over this weekend. This is a recording that came out of the CTA. That's the California Teachers Association. There's a union called the Classroom Teachers Association, or at least it used to be when my wife Karen was a teacher. But this is the California Teachers Association. They had a conference that was all about LGBT issues. And at this conference, they had somebody who was recording some of what they were telling the teachers about how to get around the parents. It is bombshell information. You're going to want to hear this. We'll be right back.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com. Month, the California Teachers Association, CTA, held a conference advising teachers on best practices for subverting parents. This is an article by Abigail Schreier on Substack. She says, the best practices for subverting parents, conservative communities, and school principals on the issues of gender identity and sexual orientation. Speakers went so far as to tout their surveillance of students' Google searches, of their internet activity, and of their hallway conversations in order to target sixth graders for personal invitations to LGBTQ clubs, while actively concealing these clubs' membership roles from the parents. So think about that. So how do we get around the parents? How do we identify people that we can pull into our web of influence and groom? That's what this is about. I've said from the very beginning, this whole thing about LGBTQ for kids in schools, all of that is about grooming. It's all pedophile grooming. If you can pretend that a child at the age of six is mature enough to say, well, I think I'm a different sex biologically, and their biological sex hasn't even kicked in yet. And they're years away from puberty. And they have absolutely no judgment to sign on to this kind of stuff. And so all of this is gender gaslighting. And it's absolutely reprehensible that it would be done by schools. But it's being done by government schools. And they see it as a virtue. And they're planning on how they can do it covertly, how they can hide it from administrations, from communities, and from parents. And if you can claim that a child is a mature minor and can make that kind of a decision, then that child can make a decision about consensual sex. That child can also make a decision about getting a vaccine, even though they don't have the maturity to make that kind of decision either. This is what has always been behind the idea of children's rights. That is to remove them from the protection of the parents. That's the whole purpose. It sounds like a noble thing. Oh, children have rights. Well, they should be protected. And the people who should be protecting them are the parents. So in this particular case, as Abigail Schreier points out on Substack, she said it was a sold-out event in Palm Springs. It was held from October the 29th to the 31st this year. This is about 2 weeks ago, maybe three weeks ago. The 2021 LGBTQ plus issues conference, Beyond the Binary, Identity and Imagining Possibilities. That's sold out. It provided best practices workshops that encouraged teachers to, quote, have the courage to create a safe environment that fosters bravery to explore sexual orientation, gender identity, and expression. This is what they're focused on.
Several of the workshops advise teachers on the creation of middle school LGBTQ clubs, commonly known as the Gay Straight Alliance Clubs, or the GSAs. The problem is that those have been around long enough that many parents remember when they were in school, and they know exactly what that is. So it's necessary for us to change the name so that the parents don't know what's happening. One workshop, Queering in the Middle, that's what it was called, focused on what practices have worked for successful middle school GSAs and children at this age developmentally, quote unquote. But what makes for a successful LGBTQ middle school club? Ask Abigail Schreier. What to do about meddlesome parents who don't want their middle schoolers participating in such a club? What if parents ask a club leader point blank if their child is a member? Well, Buena Vista middle school teacher and LGBTQ club leader Lori Caldera, and you'll hear a lot about her here. She said, because we are not official, because we have no club rosters, we keep no records. In fact, sometimes we don't really want to keep records because if parents get upset their kids are coming, we're like, yeah, I don't know. Maybe they came. You know, we would never want a kid to get in trouble for attending if their parents were upset. And all this was found because we had somebody attend this sold-out conference, sold out to Satan is what it was. They attended this conference, and they recorded these some of these workshops on audio, and they sent it out to some reporters. They go on to say, so these are quotes coming off of the audio. The advice to those who run middle school LGBTQ clubs is keep no records so you can plead ignorance when the membership of the member's parents. In fact, middle school teacher Kelly Baraki can be heard in the same session describing having named her club the Equity Club. Oh, yeah, we know what that is, too, don't you? If you're clever, you know what the Equity Club is. So they got an even better name. We know that equity is about this intersectionality where you assign virtue boxes to skin color and sexual orientation, things like that. Then you total them up and you rank people, right, based on how many boxes you've checked. So it's not about equality. That's what they mean by equity. So a parent might understand what an equity club is and get suspicious. So they said a better name is UBU. UBU. Rather than the more ubiquitous GSA, Gay Straight Alliance. Caldera and Baraki, both of them middle school teachers, led a workshop titled, quote, How We Run a GSA in Conservative Communities. They said, well, we have LGBT kids who come to us and they come and spend a year with us and then they get all the love and affirmation that they need, said Caldera. And then, quote, we give them the tools to be powerful and brave and bold, but they go and hang out with their friends at lunch and we miss them when they don't join us. So we saw our membership numbers start to decline. Well, how do we get to hang out with these kids? I mean, is that really kind of a healthy thing for a teacher to be that dependent on these kinds of relationships, especially when they're sexually involved here on sexual subjects? Middle school kids apparently did not have endless interest in sitting around with their teachers during lunch discussing their sexual orientation and gender identities, which is what these perverts feed off of. You see, they have to have that. It's like, oh, this is great. I just, you know, we had this conversation and, you know, oh. She points out, she said, I have assembled a team to help me with announcements, you know, on the intercom. She said, I've got three of the kids on the team. Two of them are non-binary. The other one's just very fluid in every way. She's fabulous. This is filling a need in these people. This is why I call it grooming. That's what this is. These people are perverts. And they need to be not be turning your kids over to them. Remember, the doctrine in loco parentis, in place of the parents, the courts have found you take your child to school. In the opinion of many courts, you have abandoned your child to the state. They will act in place of the parents and do whatever they wish. And even if you tell them by legislation or by school board You know, even if you go through and you fight all this and you got a school board that agrees with you and you got a governor who agrees with you and you got local officials who agree with you, these teachers are going to do what they want. These pedophiles are going to groom your kids one way or the other. Get your kids out. How much more do you need to see? Well, let me give you some more because there's more in this that is super creepy. So she said, middle kid schools are not hanging around them. And so she's concerned about that. She said, at the end of the 2020 school year, what are we going to do? We've got to see some kids in person at the end of the year. Not many, but a few. So we started to try to identify kids. They're desperate. This is a big need for these lesbians. So when we're doing our virtual learning, we totally stalked what they were doing on Google. This is a quote. When they weren't doing schoolwork, we totally stalked what they were doing on Google. One of them was Googling Trans Day of Visibility. And we're like, check, we're going to invite that kid when we get back on campus. Beyond electronic surveillance of kids' internet use, writes Abigail Schreier, she said, quote, this is quoting the teachers again, we use our observations of kids in the classroom, of conversations that we hear, to personally invite students. Because that's really the way we kind of get the bodies in the door, right? They need an invitation to come in. I'm the teacher who runs our morning announcements, Caldera said. And that's the kind of strategy I can give you. I'm the one who controls the messaging. Everybody says, oh, Ms. Caldera, you're so sweet you volunteered to do that. Of course I'm so sweet I volunteered to do that. Because then I control the information that goes home. And for the first time this year, students have been allowed to put openly LGBT content into our morning announcement slides. Right. You can almost hear her cackling like a witch. Everything that is listed in the parents' rights handbook, we covered that. And that's not what the parents went home and told the parents, though, she said. She said, I knew there was going to be some parental backlash as to what we were doing with the kids. I mean, this is what you heard at the beginning of the lockdown. You had an English teacher saying, well, I don't want these conservatives watching what we're teaching these kids, because in English class, that person was teaching them all kinds of Marxist racism, CRT stuff, and teaching them, grooming them for the LGBT people. Didn't want the parents to see that. And that was coming out of the English class. So she said, well, there was parental backlash. And so these two were running this session together, Caldera and Baraki, learned from the experience. They said, next year, we're going to do just a little bit of a mind trick on our sixth graders. Next year, they're going to do a mind trick on the sixth graders. She goes on to say, they were the last to go through this presentation, and the gender stuff was the last thing that we talked about. So next year, they're going to be first in the presentation, and the gender stuff will be the first thing they're about to hear. Hopefully to mitigate, you know, these kinds of responses, right? In other words, the problem was last year they did the older kids and they went down the youngest ones last. And the last thing they taught the youngest ones was what was going on, you know, to groom them sexually. And by that time, a lot of parents figured this out. It kind of thwarted their plan. So now they're going to start with the youngest kids first, and then the first thing they're going to do is the gender stuff. She said, parents who oppose this material are being taught to their sixth graders will find their objections arrive too late, commented Abigail Schreier. One parent objected so strenuously that the principal, quote, invited them to take their child to a private school that more aligns with them, said Caldera. So that was a win, right? We count that as a win. And then Caldera added, plus, I hate to say this, but thank you, CTA. That's the California Teachers Association. I have tenure. You can't fire me for running a GSA, a Gay-Straight Alliance. And so you can be mad, but you can't fire me for it. And that's why we never put our kids in school, because my wife, Karen, was a teacher in school. That was before this kind of stuff happened. It was before the racism and the hatred of critical race theory. It was before the sexual grooming of this LGBT curriculum, before drag queen story time hour, any of that kind of crazy stuff. It was simply a teacher who got a lot of pleasure out of bullying a child, would even make him get up in front of the classroom and stand in a trash can and bring him to tears, telling everybody he's a piece of trash and things like that. She went to the principal. She said, "This is what this person's doing. You got to stop this." And he said, "Well, I know that's happening. I had a lot of reports about that, but they've got tenure." So she got out of the school system, and we never put our kids, any of our kids, in that system. It's much worse now. Much worse now. It is calculated and institutionalized, and they have workshops on how to do it, not just emotionally, but sexually. Caldera, who you heard plotting all this stuff, is an award-winning teacher, and she is leader of her school's Equity Club. They call it the Equity Club. She has shared her views publicly before. She did it in a podcast interview, November the 5th, 2020. She said pretty much the same type of stuff. So this is no secret. They don't try to hide it anymore. So why is it that parents don't understand what's going on? They laughed at the parents in this, said the person who put this out. She recorded it and gave it to reporters. She said it was horrifying to listen to not just one teacher, but really all of the teachers in all of these seminars excoriating parents. They laughed at the parents. They mocked the parents for their concerns. They conspired as to how they were going to hide this from the parents. An article at LifeSite News says the LGBT mob is coming after our children, and it's time to fight back. And as they point out, just take a look at some of the recent things that have happened in Florida, you know, where you have the Broward County school board member who, Sarah Leonardi, who bragged about the fact she took young children to a gay bar. She even posted it on social media, said she was honored to do that. She said, they need to know about our community. As they point out, you don't want to take kids to any bar. That basically ought to be against the law. Why would you do that? But especially a bar where you got menu items such as Naked, Sweaty, Loving, and a burger called the Ivana Hooker. And then last week, we had Vermont mandating that states' public schools make condoms available to children as young as 12. So why are you surprised about the mask mandates and about the vaccine mandates that they're trying to push on these kids? Why is that surprising? Look at the way they use them. So in Wyoming, in one county where the parents are not happy with what is being done, the school board commissioners came up with a solution. Parents raised objections, or 85 different objections, to what they considered to be pornographic material being made to their children in school. And so they raised these objections, and the solution for the county commissioners was just to strike all public comments at the meetings on any issue. So we'll just gag everybody. That sounds like the solution that we've seen on social media from these Democrats in so many different areas, doesn't it? Let me tell you where this all comes from. These are government schools, and we have government pedophile schools because we have a pedophile government. They have covered up for this for the longest period of time. And to make sure that you understand what's happening and to understand that the way they control us is with partisan loyalty, I want to go back to October of 2006. October the 3rd, you had the Foley scandal. This is a congressman who was from Florida, and Foley was caught texting and making suggestions that were not nearly as explicit as what these people are talking about doing to six-year-olds. He was doing it to a minor, but who was a congressional page, somebody that would probably be in high school. And so he got caught doing that, and it was a scandal. And this was released in October, beginning of October, October the 3rd, a month before the elections, and Rush Limbaugh cried foul. He said, "This is simply to hurt Republicans." And so he got Speaker of the House Dennis Hastert on And the two of them talked about how this was being blown out of all proportion, and it was just a way to attack Republicans. And I want you to hear some of the transcript that Rush published on this and that was put out by others. Radio Equalizer Blogspot put this out and had this comment before we get to the transcript. He said, in the midst of a congressional scandal that has many conservatives seriously questioning the Republican Party leadership, Rush Limbaugh was able to secure a rare interview with House Speaker Dennis Hastert. In it, Limbaugh addressed some of the grave concerns that are currently facing the party faithful, including whether or not Hastert properly dealt with gay sex allegations against now former Representative Mark Foley of Florida when they first arose. And because some conservatives have asked Hastert to resign as House Speaker over the still unfolding mess, including the editorial pages of the Washington Times, Rush dealt with that question up front. Limbaugh feels Republicans must learn to fight back better against last-minute onslaughts of negative campaigning from Democrats that utilize their mainstream media friends. Rush asked the Speaker about timing these allegations and whether they fell into the partisan October surprise category, where last-minute bombshells are dropped in order to distract from the party's message. And Hastert replied and said, well, now we took care of Mr. Foley. We found out about it. We asked him to resign. He did resign. He's gone. Now, here's a spoiler alert. Dennis Hastert, in case you don't remember, Dennis Hastert, longest-serving Speaker of the House of Republicans, was a known pedophile when he was a wrestling coach in high school. He was groomed by the Republican Party to run for Congress. He was promoted by the Republican Party to be the longest-serving Speaker of the House. And so here's this guy who subsequently now has a judicial order that bars him from being alone with any 18-year-old, anybody that's younger than 18. Dennis Hastert, a known pedophile with these, with these restrictions on him, Speaker of the House at the time, 2006. And he goes on with Rush Limbaugh to tell everybody, don't worry about it, this homosexual Mark Foley who was grooming a congressional page. We found out about it. We got rid of him. It's all fine. And it's all just a trick by the Democrats. Well, yeah, they're using it for partisan advantage, but it's still true. So he said, but you know, this is just a political issue in itself. This is Hastert speaking. And what we try to do as a Republican Party is to make a better economy, to protect the country against terrorism. And we've worked at it ever since 9/11. We worked with the president on it, and there are some people that are trying to tear us down. Forget about your kids. Forget about the moral character of the Republicans in the party. That doesn't apply. Forget about the moral character of, I don't know, Donald Trump. That doesn't apply either. Is he for lower taxes than the Democrats? All right. That's all we care about, right? Is he going to make us safe after 9/11? Yeah, we're the guys who gave you the Patriot Act, and we gave you the foreign wars and all that stuff, right? You want to reelect us. Rush said, well, it's clear to me that what the Democrats are doing here in some sort of cooperation with some of the media is to suppress conservative turnout by making it look like you guys, he said guys instead of you gays, he said, you guys knew this all along, but because you're so interested in holding the House rather than in protecting children, that you covered it up. That's what it looks like, Rush, because that's what it was. And I say this because you could say, well, you know, Rush didn't know. He didn't know about Dennis Hastert. I don't know. But when it was Dennis Hastert's turn a few years later, Rush brought some Republicans on and they ran the same playbook. Oh, this is just a dirty trick by the Democrats. There's nothing to see here. Move on. And there was something to see with Mark Foley and there was something to see with Dennis Hastert. And they use your partisan loyalty to blind you. They use it to shut your mouth, and they use it to pull all of these tricks that we've seen in the last year. So he said, yeah, they're trying to say that you're more interested in holding the House than protecting children. And Speaker Hastert says, yeah. This pedophile who was selected by the Republican Party served 20 years in Congress. A large part of that, Speaker of the House. The Republicans were more interested in everything else other than protecting children. Brian Ross of ABC said, Rush, he said, here's a proof that we know this is all political. Brian Ross of ABC admitted that he knew about this all the way back into August, but he didn't have the time for it then because he's worried about Katrina and September 11th and so forth. So, you know, he didn't cover it for 2 months, and now he's putting it out in October. Maybe he used it. I'm sure he used it. Sure they used it as a political weapon. But shame on the Republicans for giving this a pass. Shame on the Republicans for giving Melania Trump and Donald Trump and Rona McDaniels a pass on their Pride Coalition. Shame on them, and shame on Republican voters who don't want to admit what is really going on. Hastert said, well, we asked the FBI. I don't think you could ask anybody better than the FBI. And they brought forward this investigation. Yeah, the FBI that's got still on the name of, still have on their building the name of J. Edgar Hoover. This guy who pranced around in high heels and a dress, the original tranny. I'm sure they'll probably, because, you know, he always hid the fact that he was a tranny, but now it's cool. And I imagine, you know, we'll have some, it's just a matter of time before somebody pulls this stuff up and drags J. Edgar Hoover's history out of the closet. He'll become such a hero, they'll put him on the dollar bill and get rid of George Washington. I guarantee you, it's just a matter of time. So Rush says, well, I have to tell you, there's a hunger and a real craving amongst conservative voters for Republicans in Washington, the House and the Senate, both, to simply refuse to be set back on your heels, your high heels, and accept this defensive position and just go on offense and strike back at these guys. He says, hey, Mark Foley is not what the future of this country is about, quote unquote. In other words, this is what you need to say then. It's about protecting the nation, national security, prosperity, ongoing efforts to maintain a good economy, not destroying the health care system. He learned this from Clinton. So when Clinton had all these scandals, economic, political corruption scandals, when he was had multiple accusations of violent sexual assault and rape, you had Ken Starr, who later would be a defense attorney for Jeffrey Epstein. Ken Starr, the sparkling Republican Christian who was going to prosecute these crimes of Clinton, and he gave him a pass on everything except when he committed perjury about consensual sex with Monica Lewinsky. And on the basis of that, they impeached him. And so you had James Carville, who was, you know, helping him get elected, came out and he said, it's economy, stupid. It's just economy. It don't matter what he does. It's just economy. And you know what? That's what America has become. We don't care about the Caligulas and the Republican Party, and we don't care that Clinton is a Caligula. We don't care that Donald Trump is a Caligula. We don't care that Dennis Hastert is a Caligula. We support the Caligulas that lower our taxes, and we deserve the society that we live in. So Hastert says, well, we're going to go on offense. We're going to answer the concerns people have about this Foley situation, and we've made the Page system safer. You know what they didn't do? Be real easy. You change the statute of limitations. Right now it's 3 years. The kids have to come to grips with what they did. They have to tell somebody about it that's an adult, as ashamed as they are of how they've been victimized. And then the prosecutors have got to bring a case, and all that's got to happen within 3 years, and it hardly ever does. And that's why they have left it that way. If you were to take off the statute of limitations, it would not be ex post facto prosecution. It would just say, well, if you committed this crime, we're going to come after you. It doesn't matter how long ago that happened. And it would still be a difficult burden of proof the longer it happens. And that's the other aspect of this. But you would have, who knows, how many Republicans would be in the crosshairs with that. And so that's what they're not going to do. So Rush said, what happens if the Democrats win? Well, Speaker Hastert says, you're going to see higher taxes. You're going to see more litigation. You're going to see more regulation. That's what it's all about. And we won't have this economy. Yeah, people sell out their children. We have sold our children. We have sold our country into this kind of Sodom and Gomorrah for a few pieces of silver. So further on in this, I'm going to labor on this because this is about blind partisanship, and this is how they control you with the coins. He says, well, a lot of people are saying in Washington, we've known about Mr. Foley's sexual orientation. And so Rush Limbaugh says to Dennis Hastert, he said, when the first set of emails hit and the red flags of alarm went up, was there any hesitation on the part of the Republican leadership to not deal with this in public at that point because of his sexual orientation? Because you didn't want to appear to be gay bashing? He said this to the speaker, who had been a pedophile for 20 years prior to that. And so the pedophile, Hastert, says, no, first of all, what we knew is exactly what I told you. The parents contacted us. They wanted some place to go because they didn't want this contact to go on. And what we knew about it was that Mark Foley contacted this kid through an email and asked him how he got through the hurricane. And so he said, we went to Foley, we confronted him, he said he wouldn't do it anymore, he was sorry, he was just trying to talk to the kid, he liked the kid, nice kid, and he wouldn't do it anymore, he said. So we told him not to do it anymore, there or to anybody, period. See, it's done. It's done. And that's the quote from Hastert, who is now barred from being alone with anyone under the age of 18. And who, when his crimes came to light, the same playbook was run by Rush Limbaugh, who would defend Republicans on anything, including pedophilia. A Colorado state board has dropped the term sex offender. They say that it is a negative label. They voted to change the term sex offenders because it was too pejorative. Don't you think it should be pejorative? You think there should be some shame in it? Or should we be proud of our sin, right? Because why not? You know, Trump is proud. Clinton is proud. Jeffrey Epstein was proud. Ghislaine was proud. All of them proud. Sex Offender Management Board said one person came in who had said, I'm involved today after hearing that it would be improper or offensive in some manner for me to refer to the man who raped me as a sex offender. So she said, I'm here to talk about this. You're going to sanitize this crime, which is what Ken Starr did. He sanitized the Clinton crimes. He sanitized the Epstein crimes. He sanitized the rapes that were done by the Baylor football team when he was there. A rape survivor, Kimberly Corbin, is among those who spoke out against changing the term sex offender. She said, the biggest thing for me is that these sex offenders made this choice. But one of the sex offenders said he shouldn't have to carry the label for life. He argued that he would prefer the term client. Client? He said client was one of the five options that the board considered. Supporters of the change in terminology argue that it will reduce recidivism. Opponents say that it will only reduce accountability, noting that victims and survivors live with their label for life. In the end, the board voted 10-6 to change the term to adults who commit sexual offenses. Well, that makes it all better, doesn't it? Because you see what, the game that they're playing is the same game that these pedophile teachers were playing, grooming these kids for sexual abuse of one sort or the other. You have a term the Gay Straight Alliance, you change it to the Equity Club, or you change it to the You to Me Club, or You as You, or something like that. You know, you just change the name so people don't know what you're doing. So now they're not sex offenders in Colorado. They are adults who commit sexual offenses. Let's just say they're adults who made sexual mistakes. Mistakes were made, right? Nothing to see here. We're not going to worry about that. I've got just a couple of minutes here. And one of the things that I did not get to in much detail is the fact that we have Francis Collins, who is now very upset about the fact that he says, well, technically, and I'm not sure that I believe him, the defense that they've now taken against the puppy torture case is that, well, technically, our name was on there as funding this, but we really didn't fund it. Well, I think we need to see some proof of that, frankly. But as I've said before, that's not the worst thing he's done. He experimented, as RFK Jr. pointed out in his book, he experimented during the AIDS epidemic, Fauci did. And I don't recall if Francis Collins was with the NIH at that point in time, or if he was with the Human Genome Project. But in his book about Fauci, RFK Jr. points out that Fauci was experimenting on kids who'd been taken by CPS, or orphans, or people that had been taken away from their family. And they experimented on them. Horrific consequences. They killed many of them. And then we know that both Francis Collins and Fauci are funding research to create humanized mice, and that involves taking children that are mature, babies, and having them born in a certain way that makes sure that they're still alive when they're born so they can harvest their organs, and they can supply them fresh, not frozen, not damaged with anything that would deaden the pain or would kill them or anything like that. No, they're going to cut them apart alive. Now, that's what's not being talked about. But what is being talked about is that Francis Collins thinks that people who tell untruths, and of course, he will be the arbiter of what is true and what is false. And so if he disagrees with something that you say, he thinks that you need to be locked up. These people need to be locked up. It is absolutely unbelievable. Just to take a quick look at the headlines before we run out of time with these toxic medications. An orthopedic surgeon performed 800 surgeries per year before he got his vaccine. But now he can't work at all due to COVID vaccine injuries. We have 2,620 dead babies listed in the Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System after COVID shots. It's now up to 2,600 dead babies. More fetal deaths in 11 months than in the past 30 years following all vaccines. It took a little bit longer for this to start happening. You know, the more heart attacks, the more deaths, the more blood clot debilitating things, the more paralysis, the more of every different category. But dead babies is one that took a little while because they didn't bring in the pregnant women as soon as the others. But now it is like the others. More than all the other vaccines, and this isn't a vaccine, but more than all vaccines for the last 30 years. Fauci says babies and toddlers are going to be eligible for the COVID jabs in the first quarter of 2022. He's going to start injecting babies. This guy, what do you expect? This is a guy who, to test his products, put out contracts to cut babies up alive. But the only thing that people are concerned about is the puppy thing. It's just amazing to me. Vaccinated English adults under 60 are dying at twice the rate of unvaccinated people at the same age. As a matter of fact, Public Health England, which keeps track of the data, says that COVID infection rates are higher in the vaccinated than in the unvaccinated because it is a toxic injection. As I pointed out for you earlier, Gottlieb says that he thinks the CDC will consider to be fully vaccinated will include a third shot, will include boosters. Fauci, on the other hand, is cagey about all of this. He says, we're going to be changing the definition of fully vaccinated. Maybe we might modify it, he says. And then when he gets, you know, he throws out these trial balloons, he steps back to see how people react to it. Obviously, people reacted to that. So he says, well, the federal definition of fully vaccinated is not going to be changing to include vaccinated, at least not anytime soon. We're going to start, the next step will be we're going to be injecting babies. That's it for today's broadcast. Thank you for listening.
Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.